You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's bizarre adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hey.
It's Niall.
Hey.
And it's me, Brian. And tonight's episode is... Sex Pistols Appears, Part 2. Or as it's called on Crunchyroll, Six Bullets Appears, Part 2.
I meant to put it in like a slash with the two alternate titles. But, yeah.
In which we're up against Saleh and his stand, Arts and Crafts.
That was one of the funniest jokes in the thing. Well done, translators.
Or, as you could hear everyone saying, Kraftwerk.
Yeah. Well, they rename him as well, or?
No one can copyright the Italian for salt. You can't do
fucking,
that.
Man, maybe. You never know.
Well, we'll see what's on. They got that fucking fascist government, and who knows what they're going to do next.
And then we've got Blimmin. And the very next show we talk about, everyone's just named after cars, and they don't bother changing anything.
That could be any Subaru. It could be any Subaru. That could be any Mitsubishi Ford. Oh, wait.
So, Arts and Kraftwerk appears to have... Its power seems to be that it can immobilize things, like hold things in place, remove the kinetic energy from them, and...
Yeah.
It sticks it in place.
But in
much
relative
like the
to...
Arts and Crafts glue that
yes.
it is named after.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
But it's not like a... Yeah, go ahead, Dom.
I was going to say, isn't there like a... I haven't played the game, but I know it exists. Isn't there like a power like that in Zelda Breath of the Wild? You can feed stuff and then you can keep
whacking
it.
Oh, yeah, because he was doing the tapping thing as well. I was like, that's totally off Breath of the Wild, where you hit it while it's frozen to like imbue it with kinetic energy before it gets unfrozen. I was like, that's fucking Breath of the Wild power, man. I reckon
JoJo
that
did
years
it.
Ago.
Yeah, JoJo oh, did it.
Link took that from JoJo. No doubt.
Except it seems to be like there's like a relative gravity positioning momentum thing going on because
the bullets are obviously technically flying along with the van, but he's stuck them in relation to the van. I think what's happening there.
I presume so. Yeah.
Yeah. Stuck them in the air relative to the van because it's like when he throws the rocks in the air, they're just thrown. They're stuck relative to where he threw them. Mm. That kind of way.
Yeah. Yes. So, Mister's like, I've got to get this guy because he's seen my face. He knows I'm here. Got to stop him.
Bang!
I say I'm going to jump on this truck. And then he ends up getting stuck on the truck. The driver's also got his foot stuck on the pedal, so he can't stop.
Yeah,
the truck.
He instantly realizes that the driver isn't the guy he's looking for.
Yeah.
Even though we've never seen this guy's face, he's not fabulous enough.
Yeah. So shoots him in the head, but it turns out that. He has stopped the bullet before it got into his skull, and he caught the other bullets as well.
Mm. Like, talk about thick skin. Like, that's large. It is, you know, like, vanished into his forehead, but yes. It hasn't penetrated his skull.
Yeah, I guess he could stop it as soon as it touched his skin, but it was still, like, you know, there's still the instant it's going to travel into his fucking skull a little bit.
He has some kind of weird Cro-Magnon head. It was, like, extra forehead and...
And we also
just such an occasion.
We get Mr.'s origin this episode as well.
Was the other bit that made me laugh out loud when he's standing there calmly loading the gun.
This is a very funny episode. Between his origin about him being super simple minded.
He's so dumb, you can't win.
Yeah, pretty much. He can't be distracted by things because...
He just wants to live a simple life.
Just wants to live a simple life.
You probably should have met up with Kira. You probably could have stopped a lot of murders because Kira's wanted a simple life. You could have shown him how.
Kira didn't want a simple life. He wanted to chop off women's hands and fucking go out on dates with them.
maybe we could show him how he could have like a quiet life without murdering people and dismembering them.
Well, just going to the cinema and beating up people who gave out about movie stars and taking their money.
Going down some gangsters in the street.
He saves a woman from being attacked by some gangsters and then murders them all with this gun he'd found. He'd taken off them, hadn't he? Yeah.
The narrator explains it's like in a panic you can easily like miss like you know with your shots because you're just like oh shit and the guy's like oh my god this guy's bulletproof but they keep shooting at him and every bullet misses.
Like they gave the dirty like rational reasoning why there's one guy when he fired at him he might have missed because oh I think he's kind of got the light in his eyes it's just kind of dark he can't make out precisely where he is but and then the lads just like start unloading three separate guns unloading clips at, like at Mister and he says huh what's this
yeah at this point I was having to remind myself he hasn't got his stand power yet at this point
because I was thinking is this the reveal that is his stand power are they kicking the bullets away from him it's like no. Nope.
I think it's like this revealing this latent potential, and this is the first like glimmering of that.
Yes.
Yeah, so. But he just literally doesn't have little men kicking the bullets away from him, which is his power.
Yeah,
or maybe he did. No, but it just hadn't manifested as six little men yet.
Mm.
Yeah, you get the feeling like, oh, if he could survive through this, then he's most likely would have been able to survive that arrow hitting him. As well.
Yeah, I guess that's true as well. It does show his potential for arrow getting shot with. Yeah.
But the other funny stuff in this episode, the funny stuff is the stuff with the driver of the truck.
Oh, yeah, that driver has had the worst day.
Mister's plans constantly changing. He's constantly, right, I want you to stop. What are you stop for? We've got to keep on moving.
I think you fucking told me to stop. It's like, come on, we get it back to the dock. I'll take it around to the dock. It's like, whoa, break, buddy. He's right in the middle of the road. It's like, fucking guy.
Okay, woo. What are you stopping for? You can try grind him over. Get away from him.
And there's the performances of the Sex Pistols as well. I love.
Oh yeah, those. No, those guys are great.
They are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've got more personality than Mr. has. Which is, I think, the point. And they just...
They didn't release figures of those guys, did they? Like little mini ones?
Oh, they, I say they must have, but...
They must have, little posable dudes. Yeah.
Probably like long, long ago when the comic first came out, but we get some new anime series, it might have like some new versions of those. So
they did some reprints of the last couple of ones, yeah, so...
Like it is tailor-made for like a gacha machine where you can try to get like six guys out and they only have very minor differences between each of them, so...
Yeah, it's doing like a little fucking... what were those little muscle guys called? I can't remember.
Oh... It was called Muscle.
Was it just Muscle? Okay,
It was an acronym.
It fit that kind of format, yeah.
Millions of unusual small creatures lurking everywhere.
That's the one.
I'm of the age to know exactly off the head. I can't remember what the actual thing that they're called. The Kanikuman derived name for that sort of...
Yeah, that's the thing I was trying to think of, but I couldn't even remember the English one.
Yeah, because I've got some One Piece ones along those lines. Oh! And They did them for Stardust Crusaders, didn't they? They did two series of them for Stardust Crusaders back when I was doing the week in JoJo's News. But yeah, it's the sheer glee they have in their powers is just so much fun.
I do them full on Slim Pickens from Darth Vader going, yee-haw! Riding on a bullet.
For some reason, like, generally it'd be a thing that annoys me in a cartoon character, like fucking Alvin and the Chipmunks kind of thing, but for some reason I like all the high-pitched voices! It's kind of great. It lends them a mania that really helps their constant grinning. It's good.
Look forward to everyone double this, so it's got like, the guys in the boots just like, a helium balloon. And going,
that'd be a good way to do it, yeah.
The other funny thing is Giotto spending the entire episode trying to figure a way to get on the mountain to chase after Mister, and then at the end, Mister's come back down the mountain, and then Giotto forces that same truck driver to drive back up the mountain in pursuit of his friend.
After the driver's like basically not shouting but saying quietly to himself in his van with the window rolled up, kind of like, "Ooh, if that kid comes back, I'll fucking tell him what for. Fucking telling me what to do, giving out to me. Ooh, I'm not gonna stick for that kind of thing." Someone hops in the van. Come on, we gotta go. It's a chase.
No way, like, punk. It's fun. Saint Noble going right now. Smashes the fucking dashboard in. Okay, I'll do whatever you want.
His day's just going from worse to worse.
Oh, I'm so fired. These laughters are supposed to be fucking on the other side of the island before noon. Oh no.
It's a very small island, and I'm the only van driver on the island, but still I'm going to get fired.
And yes, the key of the battle is that Mister discovers that, oh, darn it, I've only got four bullets left. Four bullets. If only it was five or three.
And he's then kind of going like, yeah, you dropped a bunch, mister. Yeah, you really fucked up there. And he's like, shut up. And he's thinking of throwing away one bullet, I think, at one point. Silly.
Yeah, he ends up firing all his bullets, but Saleh stops them, but then he's already hit because he's been freezing the bullets he's been catching and then flicking them with his finger to fire them up with kinetic energy.
I did enjoy the amount of like back and forth where they're just on the top of the truck and Mister's like gut shot at one point and he's kind of like, hey, you know, I only got one bullet left. It's like, hey, you better not be lying to me. And they're just having like this long drawn out conversation as they're both trying to shoot each other.
I knew what you were thinking. Did I shoot five bullets or six? Do you feel lucky, punk?
Yeah,
No. Do you feel lucky, punk? No, I know. I'm not seeing this one. No, I am.
Yeah. They both had that going. It's like, listen, I only told you how many bullets you had left in your gun because I wasn't threatened by it. I wouldn't tell. I'm not just a nice guy or anything. That kind of stuff. It's like, I'm being honest. I only got one bullet left. So if I miss, I'm kind of fucked.
Yeah. And then he decides, well, I can't shoot him in the skin because his stasis power will stop it. So what if I shot him in the mouth? So
what was the logic of course his powers don't work on the inside. Why not? His powers don't make any sense anywhere. So
that was just a bluff.
Yeah.
You know, that was just a bluff.
He actually ate the bullet because he knew he was aiming for his mouth.
Yeah, I was expecting him to catch it in his teeth or something. In the traditional...
Yeah, stop it between his teeth. Yeah. Cool.
Partly because I did the Red Dead Redemption bit where... Have you been to the...
The show. That was one of my favourite bits.
The vaudeville show.
Did you shoot him in the mouth? If you shoot him anywhere else, does he just die?
I don't know. I shot him in the head, yes, and he caught the bullet.
Yeah, I did aim for his mouth, because I was like, well, he fucking asked for it, like, so if he dies, it's legal, I think.
Yeah, and you think because it's a because it's a Rockstar game, you think, oh, this is going to turn bad. And surprisingly, it doesn't.
No. That was a great show. I really enjoyed that part of the game because you're just sitting down as an audience, like shouting jeers or cheering, yes, depending on how the guys is doing, and you button presses for that. I was like, I love this. Interactive watching a show.
Because that was fresh in my mind from like a couple of weeks ago. I was like, oh, he's going to
pull up the teeth,
stand back up, and it's going to be in his teeth. But no.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some ambitious shots and movements in this episode, I think probably more so than some of the episodes so far. But I was like, those character designs aren't built for fluid movement. I wish they'd redone them like they did for part four.
Yeah, to suit the style they're going with. Like, I really enjoyed your man climbing across the cliffs on his pile of thrown rubble. That was kind of cool.
That was cool.
That being said, by the time I got to the final thing I watched this week, I was like, all the action in JoJo's was super smooth and everybody looked on model. We'll get to the show where they designed a guest character and then apparently forgot to give the character sheets to the people who are animating him.
Yeah. I think I know what you're talking about. But this episode was pretty solid overall. It's weird, like it's one of those things where it seems like it should be drawn out, but I feel like there was enough going on in there. I don't feel cheated or anything.
No, the bit where he thinks he's got him beat, and then the Sex Pistols emerge, and they're all jumping on the bullet that he's trying to...
Yeah, that was pretty great.
And they all just fun lace it into him, then.
Whoop. Yeah.
Back in the net.
They tear the bullet in half, so he can't stop it. And then they use it to
push...
They're
aiming for the bullet that's already there, doing the Robin Hood fucking thing. Aiming for a bullet with half a bullet.
And so your first introduction to Mister isn't that he's just a cold stone murderer. Somehow the guy is still alive after having a bullet in his brain.
Hmm.
I suppose he's not super deep. It's just enough to stop him from acting. But
he's certainly lobotomized to some extent.
It's in his brain now. That's not a place where you want a bullet ever.
He is like, you know, quote unquote, enemy status retired. He's going to be eating strange carrots for the rest of his days.
Yeah, because Mister is like, he is a step beyond, I think, a lot of what the other people we've had as heroes, in that while some of the other heroes have been villains before they became a hero, it's not like their stand is just designed to kill, whereas this is a guy whose stand is based around a gun, and it's like, a gun has no other purpose.
Listen, you can do some fancy shooting and some trick shots, but yeah, its main thing is to shoot bullets into the guy until he dead.
Yes.
You can start some races.
Yeah. I don't think those use bullets, though, do they?
No, and I think those were things designed after the effect. It wasn't like...
Gun was just a convenient shape to make a starting pistol, yeah.
But again, that ties into the gangster theme.
Yeah, yeah.
These aren't the saints that some of the... Not that there was many saints in previous JoJo's, but...
But yeah, I mean, like, as gangsters go, I guess they're fairly...
They are, yes. They're big soft.
I mean, they were torturing guy, but they did have a fucking dance number to do while they did that, that they'd all worked on together.
Yeah. Well, there is, like, one of our protagonist hero stand users here. His stand power is flesh-eating virus. And again, there's no other way you could kind of spin that for some other practical use. It's like, no, this is all exists to like devour people and leave no fun trace of their corpse.
Righty ho, I think that was everything covered. I think you just ended, didn't it, with the final punchline of Giorno trying to get in that truck. Next week it is first assignment from the boss. So I guess they find the fortune in the first few minutes and then it moves on to something else.
Well, it wasn't like every other guy in that dock was after them, that kind of thing.
Then we got Space Battleship Tiramisu's Way. Episode 8, is it?
Yes.
Different Future / Jikan Yo Tamare. So in the first half, Subaru, they start a... Because now he's been promoted, he's got to do a column in the in-house magazine for the...
In the school newspaper.
Yeah.
But he can't be arsed, so he just does like a city comic instead.
Yes.
And the robot is disgusted with how stupid this comic is.
But it turns out everybody else is stupid on board the ship, and it's a big hit. And it goes,
way the narrator says it, like, I feel like that's being unreliable. It's like their minds have all been destroyed by war. Like, I think they're just dipshits, yeah.
They've been worn down by the horrors of conflict and they need a little kind of liberty in their lives to remember what they're fighting for and say, nah, let's read any old shit, won't they?
Yeah.
And he goes to Subaru's head and he decides he wants to have a take a shot at being a professional manga artist.
Hmm. And the guy says he's got some chops, like, but he needs a lot of work.
Where are the cute girls in this comic? Are they coming along? Until you get some cute girls in there, we can't reconsider you for publication. I'm sorry.
Yes, some of it is definitely, it feels like maybe a satire of things the guy who wrote the comic has heard in the past.
You seem to be very focused on nipples jokes and that kind of thing. Why don't you put some cute girls in there? Yeah.
And then in Jikan Yo Tamare, him and Volga are involved in a actual skirmish outside the power suits.
Yeah, they don't call it like hand to hand combat or something.
Close quarters, that's what they call it.
Close quarters, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
And Subaru takes a shot. He pretends that he hadn't been hit. And he's
to sound tougher, but he's leaking air from his spacesuit, yeah.
And he hasn't got enough stuff in his repair kit to repair it. So he flees the scene of the battle, goes to the nearest planet, and goes to a clothes shop in order to buy a new suit.
And I love the way he's constantly like, come on, hurry, my friend's in danger. It's just like, fucking dude.
How can I help you today?
And he's got a very slow sales assistant, who is a crappy robot.
Yes.
He's Johnny Five from Short Circuit. All the way, but he's even worse than Johnny Five. He is. Yeah, he's so slow, he's just constantly telling Subaru lies and doing sales pitches that make no sense.
I think my favorite one of him pointing out the joke was him going, was like, oh, that's a nice pair of pants. I got a pair of those myself. And it's like, you got treads for legs, motherfucker.
What's he doing though? Like, okay, I gotta go try this on. Goes into the changing area. robot salesperson engages like thermal imaging mode and then Todd's, oh, I better check and see how he is. My wife's got his jocks down. Are you getting that okay? And they're, what? No, I'm fine. Get out
like,
of here.
Either that was the robot like actually having a personality and perving on him, or it was programmed to see when he pulled his pants up and then instantly pull open the curtain and is like, how do you feel about those?
Yes.
And its timing was off, but it was just like for comedy's sake, as far as I can figure, yeah.
And then the robot refused to let him carry his bags to the door himself.
And it had too strong a robotic grip to take the bags away. And again, Superman's being a dipshit. It's like he gets a top for his spacesuit where it's like, ah, it doesn't match my pants. I need to buy some pants that match this. Like, fuck's sake.
Meanwhile, Vonga has killed everybody on his own.
Well, thank goodness, because otherwise he'd be dead.
And then over the credits, Vulgar decides that he's going to give him a new nickname. It's not going to be Honorol. And he decides to call him the local star instead. That's pretty much it. It was a funny episode. I really like the second half a lot.
Mm.
Just because it's relatable. It's like, it's a relatable scene, even though you're not a space pilot, you're not in close combat. But you have definitely encountered somebody at a shop who is going far too slowly for your liking.
Mm. Or just being like in a way too, like, fucking right off action with stuff. I know how to buy pants. I know how to try them on.
Yes.
Start trying to fucking upsell me and stuff, or try and send me a line about, oh, these are the new trend. It's very popular in Milan, I suppose, I'm told by my manager. Shut the fuck up. If you want money or not.
Yeah, I think
they have a sale. You don't have to give me the pitch. I need a pair of new shoes. These ones are fucked. Well, so just shut up and give me the shoes.
They do, because they've been trained. And they're supposed to do that, otherwise they get in trouble.
And
obviously, in the case of this robot, he's been programmed to do that.
He has literally no other option.
Yes.
I guess you could say the salespeople have been programmed for that.
That is true. I can't remember if it's on this podcast or on Dynamite in the Brain, but trying to get that laptop just before Amicon.
No lives were on the line, but close to.
Yeah, because I was like, my laptop had died the day before the con. I was like, oh, let's quickly go and buy a netbook, a cheap netbook. And I was just like, just give me a netbook. I don't want to be upsold on anything. Can you just not upsell me on anything? Just let me pay for it. And yeah, I just had to keep on stopping them every time they're about to upsell me on something. Do you want antivirus?
Oh, do you like this package? It's like, no, I just need it to work for an anime con. What's the cheapest anime con model you have available?
If you don't have antivirus, you might be susceptible to viruses on the internet. I'm not putting it on the internet.
This is never going online.
Yeah, I should have stood to that because then it was blooming updated during a panel at Hibernicon. That was my mistake. Righty-ho, then we're on to Golden Kamui, episode 19, Kamui Hoponire, I think, how you pronounce it.
It's the bear one.
It's a game of two halves again. First half is a lot of cultural stuff, but also Taniguchi trying to get Usurpa to return home, and Usurpa standing her ground and saying, no, I've got questions I want answers to.
I think it was trying to, like, obviously give the cultural learning and info dump about how they respect the animals that they hunt and everything. But it also kind of tied nicely into Usurpa needing to do this for her.
Yeah.
You can see she's upset. She wants to go see her granny and everything. But it's like, I mean, like, the method of it and everything was like, yeah, this is to move it into the next thing. And she needs this to move on as a person.
Yeah, it's also, I think, that she always presents these things as what people older than me believe. And so...
Yeah, yeah.
Because of...
I don't believe in the dream thing, like she explicitly says.
That's the thing. Yeah. That's why he's trying to get her back, because... Her grandmother's had this vision, and he wants to, if she brings us, then she will never see a Usurpa again before she dies. And so he's like, oh, if I can bring a Usurpa back, then I shall, that prophecy won't come to pass.
Yeah.
And then she'll feel better. Like, he doesn't believe it himself, but he's like, oh, if the grandmother see the prophecy didn't happen, then she'll probably feel better and be less, willing to lie down and die, essentially.
I like that he respects her decision, but then he says, go ahead, but I'm going to still be watching out for you.
Yeah. I promise I'd watch out for you. Yeah, yeah.
There is like a bit there where she has maybe felt a little bit kind of sidelined in the last little while, like, the actual kind of writing of it and actually in the story as well did feel a bit like for a while. Over Serpa, you were like the people who showed some of us how to actually survive in this landscape.
Yeah, she's the adult in a lot of.
But now the adults are here. We don't really need to be. You can just kind of call me up and say, no, fun. I thought we were doing this because you wanted to seek this stuff down to like give it back to you, I knew people over like that, and to solve the mystery of my father. I don't want to feel like I'm just like some kind of handy, convenient excuse for you to go to prison and then like sort of stuff and say, no, this is, I have as much taken this as any of the rest of you, so don't want to forget that, and don't treat me like a kid. I will shoot you with an arrow and skin you alive. So don't do that to me.
And also, a guy at this village knows the hunter from season one who...
Oh, yeah.
Your fella's got
knee here.
Yeah. And also his dog shows up, doesn't it, as well?
Oh, yeah, Ryu. Hooray.
They're all so happy to see the dog back. Tsumoto is in tears, but the dog remembers.
Yeah. It's just like the incredible journey. It's like homeward bound. Like Shikamaru's gone, all this time, he was following on trail all the way up here. A little, poor little guy. Oh, he's biting me, but he's so happy to see me.
What a goof.
Taniguchi. Okay, I'm calling him Taniguchi because I've written it down wrong. So then the conversation he has with Agata about him thinking that he'd killed a bunch of people, he was actually a bear. And then that leads us into the second half, which is a flashback to Agata's past. Boy, oh boy!
I guess, understanding, certainly. Sympathy, at a stretch, but like, you know, yeah, no, just fuck that guy.
He's not well, but also, because he's not well, he sees through other people's bullshit. But yes.
Like, he knows what Tsurumi's doing to him, but he just doesn't fucking care.
Until he cares.
Yeah.
Or until it's of no use to him. It's just...
It suits him right now for Tsurumi's charms to work on him.
It's just him to see what will happen if he goes along with him. Because that seems to be a lot of his
story. Oh, I'd
say
he'd jump ship if something fucking showed up for him. Yeah.
A lot of his story is him doing things just to see what the consequence of him doing that thing is.
Which is, like, directly tied into his fucking backstory. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, as well, just trying to sort of kind of feel anything, because all this, like, horror has transpired, you know, like, in his childhood, and, like, all up to his life, but he never really had this great sort of reaction or anything to us. So now he's just like, what if I did that? Would that make me feel anything? Would it make my estranged dad who disowns me feel any differently about me? I'll find out and see what happens with this.
I didn't kill him to make him feel bad. I just wanted to see what would happen. Yeah.
And then nothing did. Huh. How about that? Maybe if I kill my estranged father, maybe something will happen then. And he just keeps going up through those stages, you know, and kind of repeating the same thing over and over and expecting different results, i.e. different insanity.
Exactly. Yeah.
Maybe he'll get mad if he... Stuff on there. I was gonna say, maybe he'll get mad if he treads in Wolverine's poop.
That would piss me off, yeah.
It's like, basically, it's telling the tale of him. We meet him as he's in the process of murdering his father in this flashback. And then he's explaining why he's doing this and all the things he's done leading up to this.
Yeah, I actually really loved how that scene was fucking directed, because I think he has his sort of... So it's got kind of his undercut haircut, so it's kind of bald, both the sides are all kind of really loose and floppy tops. He's always kind of like sticking it back. He's kind of chatting away and talking about what's going on here. And then he's kind of bent up his hand, fucking dripping in blood, and one sticks his fucking hair back and saying, maybe if I kill this guy, something would happen. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, whoa, what's this? You know something is really off about it, but then seeing this, the hand covered in gold come up very calmly and like matter of factly, it's like, oh yeah, this is some mean shit going on here.
isn't this a flashback within a flashback, which is a thing you're not supposed to do? Because it's Sarumi's flashback, and it's his flashback within that flashback. Yes. Narratively, you're not supposed to do that, but it works quite well here.
And there's also stuff about inherited honor and valor here as well, because it's like, his dad's inherited this valor because the grandfather had committed suicide, and now Sarumi's sent him off to murder his dad, essentially, so that they'll then make it look like suicide, and so that then now
the
one surviving son,
honor.
Yes, the bastard son, he'll be the guy. And everyone
he'll inherit honor from his murder that was made look like a suicide.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Okay, whatever you think, sir.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, functional stuff they can use to gain more power in the army. Yeah.
Well, something as well, the Seventh were being, like, investigated and made a scapegoat for some kind of thing as well, and it was a way to, like, divest themselves of that.
Mm.
Yeah, and sort of get morale among the men by having this figure in the division as well. Which obviously then that explains a bit more of why they all feel so betrayed that Agatha's the one who's betrayed them. If Sarumi had been building up Agatha into this mythical figure to motivate them.
Mm.
Yeah, when, like in the last episode, he was telling his backstory to Sarumi, not so much because he gave a shit, but because all the men were watching and listening and going like, wow, what a guy. What a fascinating dude he is. We're all cool with him. But, like, it's the fact that he then jumped ship is kind of,
And then I get him, I imagine we must get one for your new guy as well. And the other guy, the one who's totally in love with him. could get some more of that as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The scout fella, yeah.
Yes. the one who... Yeah, because I'm like, what's the deal with the guy who can see through Sarumi's thing, beyond even perhaps what Sarumi sees, the guy who recognises the military-industrial complex as it's forming? Tsukushima. I was like, now I'm like, okay, now we've seen two of these guys' deals and why they've been under Sarumi and why they left Sarumi. Mm. What's this guy's deal that somebody who seems to be having like a little bit of cynicism to him and a little bit more of reality to him, he doesn't seem like he's in love with him. The way
he seems kind of annoyed to be dealing with all these fucking maniacs all the goddamn time.
So it's like, what?
Oh, do you know what he is? He's, Mitsuhide, Jesus Christ. I would have been ashamed of anything like that. Wow, we all, you see, Mitsuhide of the fucking Seventh Division, he's like, pop up all these idiots, and that's probably why he's going to probably go his own way at some point.
Yeah, so I assume
maybe he believes in Sarumi's plan up to a point. Yeah, or something like that.
But given that how surprising Ogata's backstory was, I'm almost expect like a surprising backstory for him as well now.
Oh, that he has like a crazy backstory, but he's actually trying to be sane or something.
Yes, because whereas obviously we're seeing with the guy whose twin died and bits of him are falling off, that story is happening as we're seeing it for him.
This probably is his tragic backstory. There's less and less of him as time goes on,
and we're seeing the process of Sarumi seducing people, same as we saw it with the taxidermist. Obviously the thing with Agatha is he recognizes it's happening. He recognizes what Sarumi's up to, whereas everyone else seems to fall for it, at least initially.
Wow, Sarumi really believes in me. It's like, my fucking holy does. If he believes he can get something out of you.
Yeah, it's like he can recognize, oh yeah, this man's got charisma and he's trying to use it on me.
But boys, like, you just type, oh, I'll go with this for a while, and as soon as I try to get disposed of, or if I get thrown out, which I'm not sure if I'll just fucking do my own thing then.
Yeah, like you say, just try doing it to see what will happen. Like, it's some kind of thing of sociopathy. It doesn't seem to have any connection to what he does. He just does things to see what will happen, or if anything happens, or if he feels anything.
He might also be looking for father figures as well. So Tsurumi's a sort of father figure, and Hijikata's now a sort of father figure, and I'm guessing none of them are going to measure up to the ideal of the absent father that you had in your head as a child. And so, yeah, I'm sure he'll betray them. I'm sure he'll betray Hijikata down the line as well. He probably already intends to. I'm sure he probably...
But he was probably... Yes. As Ms. Sugimoto already warned about, he betrayed you once, he betrayed somebody once before, he'll do it again. It's in him to do that, like, on a regular basis, and it suits him.
Yeah, and there's definitely a vested interest in him gathering enough, like, turning Hijikata in, but to the correct people, not to Tsurumi, and, like, getting enough evidence of what Tsurumi's up to turn him into the government as well.
Yep, I like him. He's like one of the more interesting characters in here. And also it's like the guy who's his voice actor, his name I've forgotten, but he's the same dude who played fucking Nino in Aka and most other things. He's got a pretty distinctive timbre to him, so I love hearing him. I can hear the guy read a phone book. It'd be all in Japanese, I wouldn't understand it, but I just read the phone book.
Then we've got, next up is, let me check my list, we're on to Thunderbolt Fantasy, Swordseekers 2. Well, I believe we're on episode 28.
The song that dooms evil, in the middle of like the rampage, the sword, which was name I didn't mention last time, it's got a fucking class name, Seven Blasphemous Deaths, is essentially the new villain of the show, because like Princess of Cruelty is like, oh, I'm wielding the sword, but actually the sword is wielding me, and it's just yelling aloud. It's no, oh, how I thirst for blood, kill and kill some more for me. Everyone's being overwhelmed by this, because you can't even look at it, because just gazing upon its blade will fall under its spell. So Shang Bohan is trying to fight her off without looking at her, while Hunter Fox, also driven crazy by seeing the sword, is fighting with Lang. But like, you know, and Shang Bohan's been completely overwhelmed, you know, I was about to be killed, but like the Seven Blasphemous Deaths says, no, don't kill him yet. This guy is always like more concerned about lies of others, so kill everybody else first to increase his despair, and then we'll kill him last. So let's kill somebody else, and they're out of there. And like, fun shit, what's going on here? Hunter Fox is still under his kind of under his illusion. Lin Setsu turns up and kind of knocks him out and says, "Oh, Jesus, I'm going to take this guy away because I got plans for him." And everyone's saying, "Okay, if one don't involve him, any of his kind of shit around there, so you kind of want off with him." And Shang Bohan and Lang, I've a falling out because it's like Lang is again all about justice, saying, "Oh, your kind of moral compasses are all divided because you're siding with villains like Lin Setsu. I think it's best we just split up and try and find the Princess of Cruelty on our own." And it's like, well, fine, jeez, drama. So Lin Setsu takes Hunter Fox back to the precinct, back to the police office, and it's like, all right, okay, let's see what we've got here. It's like, oh, thank you for bringing me back. Sorry, I lost a bit of myself there. Think about my glasses that I'm always wearing. They can actually see through illusions, so I was just pretending to be going mad. Gotcha, Mr. Chad Sexington, a.k.a. Lin Setsu. So, what am I going to do with you, eh? Whoa, okay. You got me, Hunter Fox. You can see you're a pretty good cop. But how about this? We're both after the exact same thing, the Sorcerer Sword Index. So I think it's better if we join forces to the same end. Because my whole plan was to try and play both sides up against each other, but I can see you've much too smart to fall for a scheme like that. So how about we work together? And Hunter Fox is like, yes, okay, let's do that then. Like, totally not realizing the place going to one get totally get betrayed later on. I don't know. What happens then? Princess of Cruelty is like having nightmares, kind of about going back with the sword and killing her old boss. Waking up and the sword is like, well, why don't you go do that? I believe in you. You wielding me, there's nothing you can't do. I want to help you achieve to be all your potential, be the best career you can be. Oh, I don't know about that. I'm not sure I want to be doing that. Sure you do. Now go feed me. Yes, boss. Okay. And she goes off on a rampage, and again, meets up with fucking Lang, then comes this kind of stopper. Well, Ling and Lang, the two characters there. And it's this kind of funny little scene where, like, we have the Princess of Cruelty wielding the seven blasphemous deaths, which is a sword that talks, and then you got Lang with Ling, who's just talking shamisen, and they're, like, having this whole thing. Oh, what's this? A talking guitar? You were talking swords! What the fuck are you talking about?
Both stealing each other's bit, yeah.
Yeah. But this whole thing is, okay, you'll fall under my spell, won't you? And say, nope, I'll fight with my eyes closed, because, as would be natural for a musician like me, I have really good hearing, so I can just fight you with my eyes closed. With rock power, so it's just like shredding on a guitar and just knocking her back with waves of energy. But I get interrupted again by Hunter Fox and Lin Setsu coming along and just causing a big foreign distraction, because Hunter Fox has other sword that can, like, mind control people and turn them into, like, mindless zombies. And Lin Setsu is just casting illusions and just completely fucks up the whole fight. Prince of Kuti's cast, like, slinks away. And the two of them are going, yes. Now, our grand scheme is to play off, like, Princess of Cruelty and Shang Buhan against each other, who possess both halves of the Sorcerer's Sword Index. We'll let them fight each other out, and then whichever one wins, we'll pounce upon them and defeat them, because they'll probably be expended from fighting the other one, and then we'll get both halves, like, quick and easy. Won't be Lin Setsu, my criminal comrade, who definitely won't betray me, like, you know, further down the line as part of a grander scheme. Well, so, yeah, totally, dude. Let's go get him. And something happened at the end of that. No, that's pretty much the end of it there. We'll see how this plan unfolds, because, like, we know that, Lin Setsu was, like, a much grander design for this, because he definitely gave up way too easy. So see what he does with it. It's just a fun little thing, like a talking sword is a new character introduced, and is actually more entertaining than most of the cast. It's just like the voice actor is taking such glee in this, like, really setting the bits above one, wanting to murder hundreds, thousands of people. Drink all of their blood. Feed it onto me. Yeah,
does the sword also have a little puppet mouth, or is it just a guy talking over it?
It's just a sword, and it's kind of this talking, like, telekinetically. Also, Shang Buhang, like, runs into, like, the nihilist monk dude and saying, what are you doing here? It's like, oh, I'm, like, tending to these graves of people who were killed. And it's like, these are, it's from people who've been killed by the fucking, the seven blasphemous deaths. It's like, oh, have they? Yes. That person who you got in the way and we wouldn't, one of us apprehend or fucking, one of us fight and let her go. Now she has gone on and killed more people. How does that make you feel? The nihilist monk is like, oh, I don't know about that. So somebody I saved, I saved their life, but then it went off and killed more people instead. And it's like, huh, I thought I was doing good, but I guess maybe all actions are pointless. And it's Shane Bahan's like, I don't give a fuck, what this guy is doing my fucking head in. He's doing the most fucking, like, teenage 15-year-old, ooh, I'm so edgy, I can see the whole, like, pointless or the funny existence, fucking total choony fucking philosophy, viewpoint. It's like, oh, I just want to leave you here. Don't get in my way again, I'll fucking kick your ass, alright? I'm not gonna fucking let you try and fucking dodge your way out just with your fucking back talk to me. Just fuck off, dude. I like this about Shang Buhan. He's just like, he just calls people out for what they are and what they see. Like, people do the same thing to him, but it's like, oh, you're just, like, you know, fucking go between the executive and, you know, and you start being this kind of man of justice, but actually you're as kind of flexible anymore as anybody else, but I'm saying, I feel like I'm more, like, pragmatic as a means to an end, and what I want to do is ultimately good. I just don't dress it up as saying I'm this kind of very pure individual who is just, you know, this embodiment of justice and goodness and morality. I'm just a guy who gets stuff done, so whatever about that. So, I kind of just let to see how to go from here. And I was saying as well, like, a guy I came with so much into, like, swords and things, and put a goal of, like, packing them all away to the goal, so don't fall into the wrong hands. Just trying to play upon some, maybe, something in the back of his mind. It's like, Yeah, but you've taught once or twice about, you know, taking some of these sorts up for yourself, because it's probably come across a few fancy ones in your time. And like me, the talking soda can take over your mind and feed off of human blood to grow stronger. Think about it.
Yep. Then we've got Jingai-san no Yome, episode 8, Sports Festival, in which we've got cheerleading Jingai.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I missed this.
Then we get the president and the red-headed kid. They're getting very... they're becoming very rival-like.
Well, yeah, they're both the anchor in the relay race.
Yeah, then someone then they start complaining that they probably shouldn't yet let the Jingai take part in the sport.
Oh, because one's in the cavalry battle and it's a giant snake or
yes,
something?
Yes, that's the character I mentioned who is in the credits, but seems to have got just a throwaway cameo of like, look, there's somebody who isn't a boy married to a monster. Yeah, it seems advantageous, but then that they show the pink one doing a terrible job in a tug of war. And
I mean, like, obviously the two-part one is going to be great in the three-legged race, but...
Yes.
So sometimes they have advantages, sure, but, yes. Like, not they're not really put in everything that they're good at.
then they're in the relay, and then Sukitsuka draws a sign to cheer on Ichiya. And that drives him over the line, much to the two-in-one Cyclops girl despair. But then they're all happy at the end, because they have a folk dance. Which I don't think we ever had at our sports days, but we were made to do folk dancing in primary school.
God. Wait, what's that one where they have the bells and the sticks?
Not so much as far as that, no. It wasn't Morris dancing, thankfully.
I don't know, that seems like a laugh.
I mean, I probably would have enjoyed it more than whatever we were sent to do. It was like a joint schools effort, so it was like all the schools were sent to another school. It was probably like line dancing along those lines or something.
Oh, it wasn't even like traditional or anything.
Not traditional from our area, no.
Yeah. I mean, to one country.
Yes.
Yeah.
The sports festival's over, but Kanonogi-san is still waving its pom-poms around.
It's been practicing that much that it doesn't know how to stop.
That's it. That's all that happened. It was fun while it lasted, as every single episode is of this.
Hmm.
And it was nice to get a cameo of, like, characters we've not met yet. Though we also felt a bit like Bono Bono. But at least they didn't, like, hey, person, naming them and actually involving them in the story. It was like, oh, no, there is other of these monsters who we've not been introduced to yet. It's not, like, isolated to these four characters.
Yeah, there's more than these four monsters and four wives. Yeah. Or actually, five monsters. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Well, I think they count as one, even though there's two of them.
Yeah.
Then we've got Mr. Tonigawa's Middle Management Blues, episode 20.
Entertaining. It cuts back to Kaiji, but it cuts forward to Kaiji? it explains, hey, the bog, that's a thing. It's like a super rigged casino. Mr. Tonigawa is going to check out this new bog situation and see how it's going to work out for Teihai. Teihai? I'm saying that wrong.
Teihai Group.
Yeah. And it becomes very quickly apparent to Tonigawa that your man is a fucking terrible host. So Mr. Tonigawa, I'm glad you've come here to our casino on a super rigged game. I hope you'll enjoy your stay. And like one of his aides comes over. It's like, sir, whisper. It's like, oh no, you surely not. Like, and he explains the configurations of the bog that it can be like C ranked, B ranked, A ranked in terms of difficulty. But today, on the one day, it's ranked of this out of several years. It just happens to be in the Y ranking. And that means that the pins are in like a Y shape. So they all funnel down to the fucking bit at the bottom. And it's just like, what are the odds? Oh, I can't believe his luck. Damn, he must have the devil's luck, Tonegawa. And he's like, all right, fine, whatever. Let me have a go at this then. And he's like, yeah, the ball's going in pretty good. And he's like, yeah, this is actually all right. I'm doing okay at this. And then he's like, ah, but the plate system will get you, Tonegawa. There's three layers of plates, foolproof. No man could possibly pass them. And, you know, Tonegawa was like freaking out. He's like, oh shit, yeah. Like you get past one plate, that's a problem. Get past two plates, that's even more difficult. And three, it's like you're pretty much fucked. And one of his aides comes over, is like, whisper, whisper. It's like, yes, it is time. Activate the Phoenix system. And his man in black presses like a little button in his jacket kind of thing. And the balls start popping up from the bottom plate again so that Tonegawa gets a second chance and they're about to fall down. It's like, oh my God, they're like a Phoenix rising from the ashes. How could this be? And he's just like freaking out. And Tonegawa's like, listen, buddy, I know how to fucking play a game. What you do is you play your hardest. And you play it right up to the line. All scenes of him playing various games, including, crap. What's that thing where you throw a stone on the ice? Bowls?
Curling.
Curling. He's playing curling with the fucking, with the boss. And it's like, yeah, you take it right to the fucking line. But then you just barely, you barely lose by like the thinnest of margins. And that makes it satisfying. I know how to fucking rig a game and make it look fun. You're shit at this. So he's really pissed. It's like, your rigged game, it's very obvious that it's rigged when you're playing it in the favor, that kind of way.
Is a fellow he's hosting, is it Ichijo that the long haired dude?
Yeah, sorry, I forgot to mention his name. Yeah, yeah. Tonegawa was just like really not impressed with how bad a host this guy is. And then it's part B, which is, Otsugi is, himself and his assistant have a day off again, but this is not a real day off because they got to do some research and they got to get supplies to sell in the underground slave mines for the thing. But he's also like looking out for new stuff. It's like, what new stuff could we try? And your man's like, oh, how about we sell like fucking baked sweet potatoes? That's pretty thing. And he's like, no, it's not exotic enough because they have fucking sweet potatoes in the stew sometimes on Tuesdays. He's like, ah, shit, I didn't think of that. It's like, we got to find something just pure and beautiful. And they can't think of anything. So they just go, they're just about to have lunch and he sees an ad for, I think it's an ad for like a phone company or something. It's just slightly out of shot and the phone plans and that kind of thing. And he's like, I've got it. It's brilliant. And so later on in the underground slave mines, the men are like all on their break and he's like, hey, it's the fucking food guys. They're over here. And like, they're all excitedly going over. He's like, I just have an announcement to make. We have a new product coming in and it's called, and they have like a blackboard and everything with like printed signs and all this kind of stuff. I was like, I guess there's graphic designers in the slave mines and all this shit. I don't know what's going on, but,
Everyone gambles.
That's true.
Of life.
Yeah. Yeah. There's the whole ecosystem going on down there. But yeah, he pulls us in and he has his two team guys like talking about it and really trying to sell it on. It's like, it's called the Unlimited, Trail Mix or something like that. I think about it.
Unlimited Trail Mix.
And they're all kind of like, what the fuck is that? It's like, well, check it out. You give me, 5,000. I've forgotten what the money they use in the slave mine is. You give me 5,000 that, you can get, 5 bags of this. And they're like, oh, that's pretty good because I mean, like each bag is like 1,000. So like that you're getting fucking half off basically. And one guy's like, that's actually not unlimited. And he's like, right, you are my good man. That isn't unlimited. That's why we have the other special offer. And they have another sticker they reveal on their fucking board. And they appear to have developed like an Amazon type logo, but it's totally not Amazon. It's a different thing. Patent pending, different logo. It's, Trail Mix Unlimited. Trail Mix Prime, I forget what the fuck they called it, where it is actually unlimited, and he has his guy demonstrated. Basically, you pay a fee by month, but you have to be a minimum 6-month contract, and you can basically scoop up the Trail Mix out of the Trail Mix and just drink it like water. You just have as much fucking Trail Mix as you want for those 6 months. And everyone's like, that's a really fucking good deal. So they all signed up for that. Well, most people do anyway. It's just like, that's just solid, as much Trail Mix as you could possibly want. And one of his guys is like, dude, are you sure it's okay? We only got like a couple more barrels of this shit. And he's like, no, it'll be fine, says Otsugi. And so it kind of shows the men, they're just like, oh, brilliant, Trail Mix, Trail Mix, Trail Mix. And then a couple of days, they're like, ah, fucking sick of Trail Mix. And they even invent some new kinds of Trail Mix. because they talked to Otsuki and he's like, yeah, can we cancel our contract? And he's like, yeah, sure, you can cancel your contract. I mean, like, it's a 50,000, whatever thing canceling fee. They're like, what the fuck? It's like, yeah, look really fine print on the things that you had to sign with your thumbprint in blood on these contracts. Like, check it out. It's right there. And they're like, ah, son of a bitch. Yeah, there's one day of the 6-month contract where you can cancel it. So you can just cancel it then, like, free of charge. But until that day comes around, you gotta pay the fee. So they have to come up with inventive recipes to try and get through this fucking trail mix. Which involves, like, separating the cracker bits and molding them into balls with water and then sprinkling the peanuts on top. And it's like, oh, this isn't bad. But that lasts for, like, a day or two before they get fucking sick of it. And so they're just waiting for the day to finally come where they can fucking cancel their 6-month trail mix contract. And they go around the mines and they're trying to find him. And it's like, oh, it seems he took the day off today. So they can't cancel their contract because he's on the surface world just chilling like a bastard. It's like, so far he's just kind of been hanging out and just been having a nice day, basically. But it's like, oh, that's right. Undercurrent of complete evil and malevolence. I forgot about that. This brings him right back.
I wonder if it's like, you know, how it was fucking, what's it, food box or similar kind of services work for him. Oh, you got snacks delivered straight to your door. Well, however, you must be, hope you like fucking beef jerky and fucking, like, seasoned quinoa or something. It's like, oh, that, no, stop it, please. You can't remind. So it reminds me of, like, the, I've heard stories about people who want lifetime supplies of stuff. And it was like,
lifetime stickers, and then you fucking hate it.
Yeah, you know, it's like he's getting left over to his door, and then, like, one time.
Now
he,
I got diabetes. Thanks a lot.
Then one time, like, he went on a holiday, like, to like, Southeast Asia for a month. He came back, and there was a pile of up outside his door. He's like, oh, God, how do I get started away from this shit?
Yeah. And even your friends will get sick of it after a while. Yeah. But it's still pretty fun. I do like I thought the second half was a little stronger this time, but yeah, still a good show.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got Zombieland Saga, episode 8. Was it Go-Go?
Neverland Saga.
That's the one. This is the episode I was alluding to where it appeared they designed a character and then...
I mean, like, I love that character, and I love his complete inconsistency of as to how big or big his head is, or big his face is relative to his head,
or his shoulders, and how his arms work. He's this,
oh mercy!
Again, the return of like non-Euclidean fucking musculature. Is this any way you look at it? Yeah. It just might look right.
I think they've gotten too used to drawing cute little girls and they've forgotten what a gigantic man would look like. Yeah.
But he looks relatively fine in the modern day scenes. It's in the flashback that he's all over the place.
I feel like his head like swelled in that last scene. Like he was stung by a bee or something.
Maybe,
yeah.
But that makes up for all the tiny heads he had in the flashbacks. I was like...
Every time like he brought his hand up to his face and it basically like he could hold his own head in his fist. I was just like, holy shit. It's
like
amazing.
Some of the profile views of him, like, you get a lot of sense of, like, oh, this is like a 3D version head. It's like his body, his head, if you turn to look at it, it would have expected to be, like, a completely, like, flat, from two-dimensional object. Like, oh, God. forget zombies. That's the scariest thing you're going to find in this program.
So, yeah, they're all very happy with how episode 7 went. And they're doing another meet and greet, and Saki points out, no touching. But then this giant man rolls up and grabs hold of...
Giant man who doesn't watch television during lunch.
Yes, grabs hold of Lily-chan. And so Saki leaps, does a flying kick, sends him flying. And they retreat to the back.
Did like the metal guys were staring, and he's like, oh, that was a rolling Sabbath, very nice.
Yes.
Like, that's my favorite. Yeah, I love the fact that those guys are just, like, fucking B characters now, I guess, kind of.
Yeah,
biggest fans.
Yeah.
The fat one wishes it was him who was getting kicked.
Yeah, he's into that.
Those kind of fans.
Yep.
But it turns out this is Lily-chan's dad. That was why. And we learn that Lily-chan... died, was it 8 or 7 years ago, do they mention? It's...
Oh, 7 years
ago? Yeah, it's like...
I want to
cancer?
I think it's the most recent death, so it's like none of them would have been around for when they became famous and were being able to join the dots themselves.
Yeah. Well, it's like, he was like, you know, the single dad raising his child at home, and like, what do you love doing more than anything else is watching the TV together, because he just like love watching the programs. And then dad thought,
well, I think that was Lily going like, I want to be the person to make my dad smile on television. Yes.
Someone thought, okay, so if I got on TV, they get TV all the time, and then he'd be so happy, and we'd all be happy together. So then he quit his job, he becomes Lily's manager, and then turns Lily into the child star then. But however, now that the father is seeing her on TV all the time, he's not paying attention to the child that's sat next to him on the couch. He's like, oh no, this isn't what I wanted at all.
Yeah, he gets more obsessed with the with the business end of it, of TV, rather than his like pure love of TV he used to have.
Yes. For all what the episode appears to be, and I quite like the fact that it isn't about the thing it appears to be, it is about loving television and sharing that love with your kids.
Well, it's sharing the thing that you love with your kids, but not to the point where it ruins them. Like you know, the freaking parents who really force their kids into sports to the point that they get fucking obsessive about this shit. And it's just like, yeah, you did this because it's a thing you could do together and a thing you could interact with as parent and child. But yeah, and it's getting distracted from that and getting into the fucking obsessiveness over it. And the B thing of that is actually very well handled, yeah.
Yes, because the final bit of it is revealing that Lily's trans and was born male, and dad refers to her as Masao, and it's like, oh, what's going on here? But also, as this is happening as the viewer, Sakura is also being confused by this in the explanation she's getting of the flashback seeing. So Lily's concerned that puberty is going to stop her from being able to carry on the way she's carrying on.
I do like the way they put that, because it was initially like leg hair, and it was just the dad through the door. It's like, yeah, your body's getting older. It's like, don't worry about it. It happens to everyone. It's like, this isn't anything that isn't going to be a problem. The dad, while still calling her by her male name, he's still letting her live the life that she wants to do. You know, he's still trying to be supportive for her. He just doesn't realize that he's gotten too obsessed with the career end of it.
Yes.
Rather than the
Because his consoling is that the camera won't be able to see it anyway. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, which isn't the right thing to say, but you can see where he fucked up there.
This is like a challenging thing to explain to your child anyway, you know, and it's probably something that he would love to have like his partner or spouse around to help explain these kind of things. But now he has to do that. He's a big hulking brute of a guy. He's obviously not going to be his forte, but he's trying his best.
He is trying, which is at least something. Like, and I think that is why Lily still loves him in the end. It's just like, he was trying. He just kind of he fucked up, basically, yeah.
But then Lily sees a facial hair, and it shocks her so much she dies, which Saki finds hilarious.
That's Lily. Kind of,
I mean, like, it's a dumb way to die, but that's how I fucking died. Don't fucking laugh. I thought that was kind of good, but maybe it's that she has a weak heart, because her heart keeps fucking literally popping out of her chest.
Maybe.
The doctors say as much as like it was too much of a shock to her, that kind of.
There's one line in the episode, I can't remember where it is, which hints at something with the one from the 19th century, Yuguri. Like, so you're saying, like, there's a risk of being in public display in whatever era you're in. I was like, okay, so is that a hint as to...
Well, I mean, like, she probably knew other kinds of sex workers that were dudes. I assume that's what...
Well, I was thinking...
And when someone explains this, like, transness to her, she's kind of like, well, I don't even know what the fuck a zombie is, so it's all new to me.
But I can't remember if it was that or whether it was the being grabbed by the dad bit is where the line came from.
Right.
So
change the context.
They all go and speak to Kotaro, and he just basically tells them to accept it it doesn't matter. She's a zombie. She's living. Yes.
His usual, like, way of saying, it doesn't matter, zombies. Like,
I do all the time. What the fuck? It doesn't matter. It's still Lily. Fuck you guys. Just go fucking be pop stars. Go be pop stars!
Yes. But he's, thing is, though, this time he's correct. He's like, yes, this is the way you should play. It doesn't fucking matter. It shouldn't matter.
So yeah, just yeah.
You're zombies. It's just don't worry about it.
And then they got the problem of Lily wants to connect with her dad, but obviously can't go and say, hey, dad, I'm a zombie. and so they write a song to connect to him.
A song that, while it could be written about anyone, it's very specifically written for him.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also when they're performing it, Saki introduces, even though they're supposed to only be using the numbers,
yeah.
uses her real name anyway.
Whoops.
And then, yes, they just form a connection, and he's finally able to go back and watch TV again.
Hooray! Oh,
goodness. I mean, like, I get that. They're trying to show his lack of watching TV, a thing he used to always fucking watch every day, as his emotional trauma, and the fact that he can watch TV now shows that he's recovering. Yeah.
Yes. It's just that his character design in the flashback is all over the option.
He was more malleable back in the day. He's more solid and stoic now. Maybe that's it.
This was the thing I watched last, and I heard some people say, oh, the animation's a bit off in this. I was like, surely not. The animation's been pretty decent standard all the way through. And then it's like even before he shows up, it's a little rough and loose. But then when he shows up, I was like, oh, he's fine to begin with when they all think he's a Yakuza. That bit's fine.
And yeah.
It's particularly when he goes into the flashback. He looks like, there's a Flaming Carrot story where the mayor of the town, a villain, turns his head into a baby. And that's kind of what it reminded me of, his in proportions.
dear.
Mm. But yeah, very well written episode and,
Yeah. It's very nice to see, again, as it's come up quite often recently, and we're seeing a lot of improvement in this area, like the genre of anime, medium of anime. If it happened there, a topic like this was actual, like, delicacy and sympathy and so on. So.
And like you said, Brian, it's not even the main focus of it. The focus of it is on the relationship.
Yeah.
And that it's kind of a B thing where it's like, hey, that's different, and everyone just kind of going like, yeah, fuck it, like, how does that make any difference to the current problem of she wants to reconnect with her dad, but she can't because she's a zombie, which is the problem we're actually having.
Yeah, but it's like, no, as well, like, you're a zombie, you have been, given a new lease of one life. You can
second
choose,
chance kind of thing. Yeah,
you can choose whoever you want to be, and it doesn't matter. No one's going to fucking like say anything to. Because it's your own life to unlive.
Yeah, it's there where you agree against the other line, and she does question, what is a zombie anyway?
Yeah.
It's now coming up enough that I feel like they kind
it's
of.
It's going to have to be dealt with.
It has
soon
to
enough.
Be addressed by at some point.
Yeah.
Mm. As to exactly how Kotaro got them from being dead to being alive again.
Or to, from ashes, presumably, for a lot of them.
Yes.
Hmm.
We shall see. Next up on the list is Karakuri Circus is next on my list. Karakuri Circus.
Okay.
Episode 7. Demonic.
Because we're still in hell.
Yes, but I now go, oh... Yeah, Guy and Narumi are Ryo and Akira from Devilman.
Oh, yeah. Certainly.
Yeah, okay.
yeah, particularly once, like, the blade came out the arm. I was like, oh, yes. Yeah, I can see. Yeah, so he basically, in short time, finishes off the rest of those puppets.
The little fucking the ventriloquist dummy gets even creepier.
Yeah, was that the messed up thing that you mentioned?
Oh, the dude taking his head off and there's a blade inside. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, because that should be like the little doll. You know, you pull the head off and it's a knife, but it's actually the big doll.
I don't know if they do it here, but I think in the comic, he takes his head off, and then the little one throws the big one. Not at Narumi though. A different character who's not in the.
Yeah, I think at this one he swings him around. Like a blade or whatever. Yeah.
Well, I do like that he's still carrying his head in his hand and talking. Head he's carrying
and reacting to everything. Yes. Yeah.
It's just with that knife head, he looks like one of those weird henchmen that Chairface Chippendale has in the Tick, where they're all there's different stuff for heads. I suppose it's like again more like old Dick Tracy villains as well. it's that guy, Knifehead Jones, look out for him.
And the automatons seem to have a unlimited capability of producing blades and things from all sorts of places.
They've got a lot of blades at them, but they're vulnerable to angry punches.
Yeah, or just if you're speared by a blade, don't let the monster go. Just contract your muscles so you're holding on to him by the blades he's impaled you with.
Man, his fucking grin was like, hey, where are you going? Take me with you, kind of shit. As he was being pulled by the fucking harpoons when your man flying through there, I was like, this is fucking class.
Yeah. Well, creepy as hell as well.
Well, yeah, that's...
I can see why all the kids were freaked out, yeah.
Yeah, that's the point, yeah. Narumi's going all out to protect these kids, not realizing that behind him, the kids are being deeply traumatized as this man bleeds all over the place for them and...
And explodes a load of robots, terrifying them. Yeah.
Dismembering stuff.
Yeah. And the automatons are also filled with liquid themselves.
Yeah, but it's less like... Blood-like.
It looks
like blood.
To be
it still looks creepy when you have like the little like ventriloquist puppet head. You just one smash that thing open, and the fragments and the teeth and things fly everywhere, and all the goo comes out of it. It's going to give you a lot of nightmares.
I'd be hard pressed to pick what my favorite thing he does in this, but I feel like my favorite thing is when he kicks a broken blade into his own mouth to chop off the little puppet's head, and the little puppet's like, is that possible? And he's like, it's possible. I was just like, that was fucking cool. But he does a lot of cool things in this, so it's hard to pick.
Yeah, that was also quite Violence Jackie with the, not as far as Violence Jackie, he's not like holding his severed arm in his mouth as he does.
Well, it's a blade from his arm, so yes. Yeah, okay.
But that's why that image reminded me of it. And so then he decides, oh, that mask Lucille gave me, I'm going to wear that now so that I can still entertain children, because they won't know it was me who was going berserk ripping puppets apart.
Yeah. Well, children already found him terrifying, but then one of the kids from before kind of comes up to him.
Yeah, it's
showing him what he's fighting for.
Because of the skipping of stuff, which I'm sure they must have to come back to. In the comic, you know where that mask's come from at this point. Narumi doesn't, but you as a reader know the origin of that mask. And you'd also know more about what the automatons are after. And also, I think, and maybe this will happen next episode, if they come back to the Karakuri thing, this arc ends with them getting a clue. Dun, dun, dun.
Right.
In the comic, which they can then follow. But I don't know whether it's maybe from that kid who does still hug him. But again, there's loads of threads from this arc they've just thrown away. So, cause I think there's a kid who won't talk to anybody, and it's not until the end that he finally opens up and then gives them the clue they're after.
Okay.
But like I said, they've cut so much stuff out. And then that's very little of the episode. And that's the best looking part of the episode. And yet, not the goriest part of the episode.
Nope.
As we go back to the circus part, where we meet Vilma Thorne, the comedy predatory lesbian. But before she gets to be that character, she is an assassin sent to kill Masaru with her knives. But she inadvertently forms a bond with Shirogane at the zoo. Shirogane's dressed as a clown.
They have like a standoff.
My main thing was like, who lets
Hey, clown! Draw, yes. Motherfucker!
Hey, white face. That's how she knows that Vilma's also
a circus performer. Yeah, actually, she specifies the kind of clown. It's like, oh, you work in a circus then. Yeah, yeah.
But didn't... Knew she worked in a circus, but obviously he's a pro, but didn't know that he was also like, had the skill to fucking catch these fucking knives. It's like, that's not usually a thing that a clown would be trained to do, but, well, I'll
just... She did appear to be a very good clown. Because Euron was enthralled with how good a clown she was.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good clowning right there.
Pretty good moves, like, you know, like, having the discs in the air and then, like, putting the balls, like, juggling the balls through the hoops as they're in the air. That's some good skills.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I don't, like, I get your knife thrower and I get your more violence fucking theme, but the goal of, like, that's some fancy juggling clown, now fucking draw.
My more concern is the people working at the zoo who allow a woman dressed as a cowboy carrying loads of knives openly on her body into
the zoo. Are you gonna stop her?
What about that? What about in her flashback, with her kind of little bit of backstory there, she's allowed into the hospital with that get up?
I mean, like, maybe they're trying to get across that. Wait a minute, are they in Japan at this stage, or are they touring America? I'm trying to.
They're in Japan.
They're in Japan.
Okay,
because
they were going on circus tour, and I was like, are they supposed to be in a different country where wearing a bunch of knives will not get you arrested?
It's a cosplayer.
Yeah, so Vilma's a circus knife thrower whose little brother died of Xonifa. Though I'm like, did he die? Given that what we learned last time, but
they probably told her that he
yes.
died.
Yeah, well, that's probably yes.
Oh, actually, he could have died beforehand because it's only if it develops if you survive it.
Yes, okay.
Die in stage two, but not everybody goes to stage three, which is the permanent state of undeath.
Which I guess is carrying on the puppet thing. It's like you were a living person and then you've turned into an inanimate puppet.
Yeah, yeah.
So yes, she was earning money by being an assassin. Now she's been hired, presumably by one of the siblings, to kill Masaru.
He refuses to say, but probably, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so she has to fight Shirogane, and Shirogane protects Masaru by leaping in front of all the knives.
I did like her initial reaction of, holy shit, a giant puppet. And I was like, lady, you ain't seen shit. Well, yeah, she takes a lot of knives to the everywhere, really. Initially just to the legs, but then like a couple in her head.
All of her limbs, two would have gone to her head. And she's actually grand, yanks it out. It's, but it must be like nine inches of a blade went into her fucking brain. But that's okay because she presumably is also partaking of the Aquavita, so she has her fucking mutant healing factor.
Yeah, when the kid's freaking out, she's like, no, check it out. Look, I'm healing. Don't worry about it. It's
yeah,
cool.
Didn't mention to it in the previous arc when I was getting wounded all the time, but...
Well, I think in the previous arc, her legs were too cut up to move. They just hadn't healed up in time.
Yeah.
What's the idea? Yeah.
And they fight. She refuses to do the final killing blow and then joins the circus.
Mm. Well, like Master says, she was a good person at heart because if you wanted to kill me, she could kill me immediately, but decided to, you know,
two knives to scare you. And it's just like, well, you could have just fucking killed me with the first two knives then. So obviously you're holding yourself back.
Yeah, Masaru also reminds her of her little brother, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And she regarded her as well as, like, you know, because her first move after they knocked Vilma out was like, I'm just gonna fucking cut her throat right now. But Masaru's like, no, don't do that. You're not just a fucking trained killer who's, my bodyguard. You're also, like, my friend, your friend and dad. You're a person in your own right. Please don't slit her throat.
Remembering your man's words of, of life mattering kind of thing. I forget exactly how he put it. You can't throw your own life away if you're trying to protect life, that kind of thing.
It's probably also another element is that Vilma was really horny for Shirogane.
Yeah. I mean, like a lot of people in the show are, but.
Yeah, I was going to say most of the circus appears to be.
I'm not sure about the dad. I mean, the dad's probably like, thank God, someone with talent.
And there's a lion tamer. Who we skipped their entire arc. I think they just joined at the end of five, didn't they?
She's teaching the kid how to go on a unicycle, but we haven't really seen her do anything.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm. I was wondering too, was she always there? Whatever she was. So.
She kind of appeared right at the end, yeah.
I didn't pay it and get some of my stock by it. It was all right. Didn't put me out of it or nothing.
Yeah, I didn't realize. I only saw it somebody else mentioning that, oh, the person who should have had an entire arc introducing them just showed up at the end of episode 5.
Well, maybe like, you know, Emma's assistant, like, is kind of frowned upon these days and be the top best to excise that part. And she is just, I don't know, the, for PG artist, she could be anything at all. It's probably drops into heaven, for sure.
So, like, are they going to play up the predatory lesbian thing a bunch, or?
I don't know how much it is a thing throughout the comic or not.
I let the first joke kind of slide because she's being like, ooh, I'm so scared kind of thing, running under the covers like a child. That's kind of, that was all right. But I was like, if you keep doing that shit, it might be like a bit weird.
Possibly. It may get toned down because there's a lot more nudity of Shirigane in the comic.
Oh.
Of which there is none so far in the anime.
Well,
it's covered nudity. It's uncovered.
Very, very,
it's
early
uncovered
in
the comic.
Yeah.
I guess it could be taken an opportunity as well, you know, besides exciting things for expediency for the sake of the TV show as well, maybe update a few of the parts that haven't aged as well.
Sure.
So I hope he kind of maintains that tack if it is the case.
Yes, some of the stuff they've skipped, though, they're going to have to go back to.
Or at least, I mentioned like things like the mask and everything, like you mentioned.
Yeah, there's an entire arc which is basically Lucille explaining stuff. Which has, it's all flashbacks to characters who exist in the past.
Yeah. Well, with flashbacks, you can kind of put them anywhere, really, as long as it doesn't, like, contradict stuff that might have happened in the main story.
Sure.
Yeah, and also, I think they may have skipped some of the stuff because it did contradict stuff later in the story.
The fucking plot changed a little, okay.
He's just trying to fix things.
Because in the first arc with Narumi and Guy, the end of that, Narumi saves a teacher from dying by feeding some of his blood to her. Which then begs the question, well, if they've run out of aqua vitae, why aren't they just giving their blood to the Xenopher patients? Maybe it doesn't help the Xenopher patients, but they'd have to get into an argument about whether or not that's a thing.
I think it's a little injury, she says, or something.
Yeah, I think it may not be like a permanent or a fix or adequate fix. It might give if you feel sick right now, the symptoms of cure the injury, but if you have like a persistent syndrome or disease like Xenopher, it probably won't cure it.
But yeah, they also haven't, because when he tries to do that, Lucille and Guy are like, no, don't do that. You're better off letting her die than turning her into a Shirigane. Because we've also not had the full description of what a fucking nightmare it is to be a Shirigane yet. And exactly what the aqua vitae does to you. It don't just make you immortal and heal your wounds.
Cool.
It does something else to you.
Your dick falls off.
Yeah, that's it. You have to have a puppet dick as well.
Hello!
Oh, no.
Of course, it has to be the worst version of that,
No, that is not the case. Which I assume they will have to get to at some point. They will have to explain who that mask belongs to. They'll have to explain. We've had no explanation of who Lucille is whatsoever. Explanation of Guy.
You can put some things together about Lucille because you know that there was a lady or ladies like her who won doing the brutal training of Shirigane.
And he's got a similar suitcase, the other guy. You can take some guesses, given context.
I can see why they've done it because it gets this. Otherwise, it would be weird. You'd have like three chapters of this, then three episodes of the prologue, and then there would be like loads and loads of chapters of just dicking around at a circus. Then you'd get Narumi back. Then you'd get like a bunch of episodes explaining stuff about characters you've never met.
I'd still probably watch that show, but I'd hate if it was cancelled before they actually got to the end.
That's true.
Yeah.
And they would probably have had to get a full year's worth of episodes. which I'm guessing this is a compromise because it's like, well, it's a long and successful comic, but it's not necessarily one which you're going to get a year's worth of anime episodes for.
It's not that successful, sure.
No.
Mm.
And it started in 97, ended in 2006, so.
Yeah.
It's a little old. Righty-ho, then we've got Gurazene, episode 20. Was it Fan Appreciation Day? Yeah, so I did watch this, and I can't remember exactly what happens, but I remember the gist of it. I remember the first half is a weird first half in that it's another one where Bonda isn't the main character. The main character are three guys who aren't sportsmen who we've never met before.
I think we've seen them before. It says it's like, remember they were in that old episode? It's like, yeah, but they were barely like in it.
Yes. They were apparently three guys who invited Yuki to the match where Bonda pissed her off by destroying the Tempters that day. The thing I liked about them is how they're all like pretending that they're not interested in a romantic relationship with Yuki. They just want to be friends with her, and yet they're in a
monologue. They all ask her out at the same time, but each one of them.
Yeah, but they all individually are saying, let's fucking get these two out of the way, and then I can make my move.
Dear. It's not so much they're all interfering with each other, that they're just all dipshits is the problem, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so they take her out on a ice skating date, which goes very badly. It's also a way for us to learn more about Yuki than we ever do from Bonda's gazing at her.
Well, it's having interactions and conversations with her. Yeah, yes. That's how you get to know someone.
And then they invite her to the Fan Appreciation Day. And they're surprised that she's not as bothered about it. And then we learn that she knows who Bonda is in terms of Bonda the player, and she's quite happy that he got the Tempters through due to his play in exactly the way he was imagining that he had it in with her, even though he could not voice her. But she cannot recognize him when he's sitting in the shop.
Yeah, because she's delighted to go into the stadium because it's like, oh man, it's like reliving that time I saw the Tempters get through to the finals. Oh, this is great. That kind of thing. It's like, I gotta thank that guy if I see him. Which she will.
Which she does.
Yeah. Because that's how we go.
And then there's a bunch of wacky stuff and I can't remember. I know it just happens that Bonda and his mate are dressed in Egyptian clothing and they're sat there.
Yeah.
They're doing a hide and seek in the stands, and two of the players are in cosplay, himself and
Shibuya.
Like his friend, the Pharaoh
and the Cleopatra or some shit like that. He has the fake tits and everything.
Yeah, I guess it's a good disguise. I mean, they're the ones who were found last. I was like, what the fuck are you doing, lads?
The catcher was one of the people searching for them.
Yeah.
You don't think he said anything still, did he?
No, he didn't say anything. I was waiting for him to say, it's like, oh, we got you, Bond. I'm waiting for anything.
No, it was
nothing.
The other guy, said it. And the catcher just looked really proud, stood next to him. But it was weird seeing the catcher outside of his armour, that was all. He's getting this in his head that his mate's going to be more of a catch for Yuki because he earns twice as much as me, and bloody, bloody, blah.
He's also having a conversation with her. He's also leaning over and whispering in her ear secrets about the team. He's also making conversation and getting to know the person. Ooh, what a player he is.
It's like, Bonda, you're fucking taking too far ahead with any of this. And B, it's just like, you're fucking just gotta play this thing cool. And you had a little in there, and it is playing out place the way you thought it would be in your mind. Just one, like, act cool and through a drop and saying, yeah, fucking give up that run. Oh, man, that was embarrassing, but I'm glad some good came out of it. Simple as that. And then you get talking.
He has so many ins, like, she's like, oh, I'd love to shake your hand. And your man's obviously like, ooh, cute girl. Yes, I'll shake your hand, fan of the team and that kind of thing. And he's like, actually, I'd like to shake Bonda's hand as well. And her reaction's completely different. It's like, dude, just say anything. You know, just fucking try to have a human conversation with this person.
Yeah, I was like, did you go away with the impression that one of the things he'd whispered to her was that Bond is too shy to talk to you or something? He goes to your shop and he's too shy to talk to you.
I feel like he didn't know.
Okay.
If by the end of it, he's sure that she worked in some place, and Bond is trying to convince him that she works in a completely different place of town, actually. Yeah. I think you got that wrong. But either that or he's again screwing with Bonda, one of his friends screwing with him.
Because Bonda thinks he's hitting on her and he's pushing ahead on that front as well. But
yeah,
it also makes it clear at the end that his mate is not doing as well as Bonda thinks he's doing.
He's had a bad season, basically, yes. And he feels like his contract's going to go down, and it's just like, I need to try harder, I don't have time for messing around with women, it messed with my whole mojo for being the pickup artist.
Yeah, it was the case of, the times he played, he was really good, but they didn't win the matches.
So it didn't count for anything, yes. Yeah.
Whereas Bond's appearances, even though there weren't as many, he was more often than not a key part of the strategy. So he contributed more towards their pennant win.
Yeah.
Okay, I think I enjoyed it more than I remembered talking about it, even though I'm hazy in the middle bit. But
no, it's good.
This is just a lot of frustrating Bonda in this episode for me.
Yeah. Like between this and that episode where he was in the place where that guy got transferred, he's just fucking acting out. Bond's going to find like a whole new like restaurant to go eat in now, because he's going to be scrutinized from this day forward anytime he walks in that door.
Well, no, he's not.
Maybe he'll have clever disguises again. Yeah, you'd only recognize him dressed as a pharaoh.
No, I just kind of thought he'd just be so overcome with fucking anxiety about fucking this whole situation, how it's developing. I just want to not face it. I'm just going to get my fried rice somewhere else, please.
Yeah, apparently, the action figure with him in the MOPS uniform is from the sequel series to Gurizumi.
Okay, so that's not expected to happen anytime soon, I guess.
Not in this. And I question whether we'll get another series. Or maybe we will, because maybe it doesn't cost all that much to make.
Yeah.
And maybe the manga sales have gone up enough to warrant. And maybe they've sold enough copies of that theme tune.
Dude, he has two different action figures with different uniforms. They must be making some money.
Oh, that was from ages ago, though. That was from pre-anime. Just off the back of the manga.
Still, the fact that he got that, yeah.
Righty-ho, next up is Bono Bono, Get Badger Mad.
Oh, our second sociopath of the week.
Yes. I watched this after Can We, and I was like, oh, there's a lot of, I was gonna like do a same mood or same vibe Twitter post, yeah. But then, no, actually, Badger is more human than a Carter is.
Yeah.
You can actually get him upset.
They've got the same, like, fucking dead stare, though.
They do, yes. But I think you can't... I think Badger... It feels like Badger won't get upset when someone's trying to upset him.
Yeah, he won't fall for your shit, basically. Yes. Yeah.
Again, like Ogata, he sees through this stuff.
Yes.
Well,
he still goes ahead. He just doesn't bother him. He's like, oh, yeah, that's probably just raccoon being raccoon.
You got me. Yeah. Fair enough.
No, he's like, yeah. What do they try? I can't remember what.
Raccoon says, I've got some of those fucking yams you like, or something, whatever kind of fruit he likes. And he's like, oh, it's up my tree. And he climbs up the tree. He's like, psych, motherfucker, I don't got no fucking fruit. And he's like, all right. He's like, dude, what the fuck? He's like, I don't get mad when people try to get me mad. It's pretty simple. He's like, actually, I just remembered where a bunch of that fruit is that you like. It's on top of this mountain, fucking miles away. And so he goes and checks. It's not fucking there. And he comes back and he's not mad about it.
And the reason all this is happening is because Raccoon's mad at Badger for not showing up when he said he was going to show up.
Because he said yesterday that he would show up, but today he didn't fucking feel like it, so he didn't. Which is like... it's kind of a jerk thing, but yeah.
And the worst one is when they paint Bono up to look like Badger's dad. And they go, Badger, Badger, something's happened to your dad.
And he does seem kind of concerned. It's like, oh, no.
Well, he is concerned.
That's terrible.
He is, yeah. But he's not bothered.
His face doesn't change, I mean.
Yes.
Wow, that is offensive. You can't dress up like that. That's offensive on so many levels.
Yeah. And it's just kind of the look of like, seriously, is this fucking happening? And also a pitfall.
Yes.
That'll really get him.
I mean, because Bono isn't really liking this, and then the bit where Chipmunk goes, Chipmunk has never lied once in his whole life.
I thought, no, daddy fuck.
And then trying to get Bono to, like, practice lie, and he's just like, no, I can't do it. I'm too pure.
And he's like, yeah, I ate 6 shellfish yesterday. And then immediately goes, no, I can't. I only ate 5.
I can't, I'm sorry. It's all.
It's a lie. I'm a liar. But again, because I imagine, like, I figure, like, we're all imagining it, right? The sudden thought of the put-away man putting him away for telling him people he had too many shellfish.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
And then, yes, he goes, well, after he's seen through their ruse of pretending that his dad was dying and making him fall in a pit, he then walks away and treads into a Wolverine shit and then loses his shit.
Yeah. I mean, like, I guess they're in the grass, so you've something to wipe it off in, but yeah, no one likes that.
The drawing of his eyes when he finally loses it, is great.
They don't change shape, they just change tone.
Yes, they change the way they're drawn.
Yes.
It's getting pretty intense. It's like, when I get mad at it, or when I get kind of emotional, I just listen to this bends his tape without breaking it. He's just going like...
That was a good bit as well.
Don't break it, though. Not dead on him,
but I still can't believe they faked his dad's death.
That's too far, Raccoon. I'm going to blame Raccoon for that. Like, Bono's an innocent party in this, because he was like, I am your dad.
Hello, I am your father, Badger.
Yeah, I think he says, I am Badger's father, or something like that. Yeah, it's very poor lying.
It's just a bloody outfit. I thought, putting that pigment on him and throw off with that. That's probably pretty offensive in that part, some parts of the forest. I'm not sure that, but there are kids who don't know any better.
Mm.
Then we've got Quadruple S Gridman, episode 8. This confrontation, is that what it's called?
Yep. Yes.
Yeah, there you go. Totally off the top of the dome. So, Akane does not want to take part in the school festival, so she says she's going to blow up the school festival with a mecha version of the monster from the first episode.
Which she presents to the guys, because the man's like, oh, brilliant, let's bring up the monster. He's like, no, wait. It'll be more fun if I show them the monster as a model, and then I kick their ass.
Because, no, it was kind of fun. Okay, lads. Hey, come over here. Come on. Come over here. Let this guy show you something. Now, you guys all know I'm God, right? You know I'm the one making the monsters. So here's what I'm going to do. It's obviously tricked out. It's a version of the first one, but it's got fucking guns and stuff all over it, so it's super powerful now. I'm going to kill everybody's professor tomorrow. I dare you to come and try and stop me. He's just, like, so confident, so fucking self-assured.
Yeah. And they try, like, to talk her out of it in their own ways. It's like, can we just, like, postpone it? Can we fucking rain check? And they're like, we should cancel the festival. It's like, well, we're just 3 fucking students. No one's going to fucking cancel the festival because we say so.
Yeah, and also Rick is saying, why we got to go immediately to plan fight? Why can't we just maybe, like, talk with her because she is, like, a student in our class? And also, she is my friend, even though she is the person behind all this stuff. Maybe if we could, I could probably, like, convince her of... an alternative way to come some kind of agreement, some compromise.
I was weirded out by that, like the fact that she didn't want to fight this person who killed people before. But her Yuan's explanation of it to her was fairly reasonable and kind of understanding, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah, before that, though, we'd have the middle school students show up at the school. Caliber.
And everyone's freaking out. Yeah, just like,
only because
the fuck
of Caliber,
these guys?
Just wandering in. To the middle of the school, the teacher's going, what are you doing here?
It's a weird, creepy-looking guy, hunched over, wearing 4 large swords on his back. He's a most suspicious individual, yeah.
But yeah, the crux of the episode is the arguments between Ricker and Sho of, like, how to approach it. And some of that is them showing off how clever they've been in the writing up to this point, particularly the bit about how Ricker points out that it's only Sho who calls them the Gridman Alliance.
Yeah.
Stop making, try and make Gridman Alliance a thing, Sho. It's not going to happen.
We're just a bunch of friends who hang out and fight evil. It's fine.
Yeah. It's kind of like how he's obsessed with having everything play out like a tokusatsu show.
It's almost like he wants to fit into those types, that kind of thing. Maybe like he was programmed to do that. I don't know.
Yes, because when we discover that when Rika tries to talk Akane out of it, Akane explains that Rika always likes her because that's the way she made Rika to be.
And then you're programmed to love me.
Yes.
Yeah, you're programmed to love me. And don't you want to love God? That seems like a pretty sweet deal.
Which then begs the question,
it's like, but when your friends I killed, were you that friendly with them? Not so much. I was like, so it doesn't matter that they're dead, right? And it's like, that's weird. It's a weird kind of argument to present, but it's kind of like, you can't really argue with her
being
something she made. Yeah.
You can kind of see you better be by the devil's side and in his path, you know?
Yeah.
Man, I wish I could watch Gridman, because I feel like if you watch Gridman, there's things you're getting here that... Because otherwise, all I know is secondhand Gridman stuff.
Sure.
I have enough people explaining it to me on Twitter in great detail that I feel I don't need to, actually.
No. But obviously, okay. We said last week, the city they see is what the city looks like in Gridman. When they go into the digital world, suggesting that they are in the digital world, and this is more clues. Everything is adding up to the idea that possibly nobody's real apart from Yuta and Akane, and then also maybe the middle school students and Gridman.
Since they're from a different show, yeah.
Yes.
Hmm.
Well, it kind of explains as well why they have like kind of different powers and abilities that they can manifest in the real world. They're like fucking jacking into the Matrix from outside, so that's why they can do what they can do.
Yeah. I did like the way his plan of was like, oh, we don't have enough fucking RAM to like load all of them at the same time. So what if we just like load a smaller file size?
Yes,
that's pretty fun.
Yes, so that you can
Gridman.zip.
So Rika and Sho apologize to each other for their arguments earlier, and they have to come to the conclusion that there's no reasoning with Akane. At this point, at least not from Ricker's point of view. It's like, but can Yuta, as somebody who is apparently not part of Akane's program because he doesn't have memory of whatever memory he's supposed to have?
Is that her interest in him? That he's also a god or a player or whatever way you want to put it? Yeah.
Well, yeah, here's the thing. I believe that... Let me go to the list of Gridman, the Hyper Agent characters. So the equivalent of Akane in that is Takeshi Todo, who's the classmate who creates monsters based on petty grudges with the help of a mysterious being. And then you got Nioto, who's the guy who merges with Gridman. Then you got Yuka Inoue, who's the girl who Takeshi Todo also has feelings for, has a crush on. And then you've got Ippe, who's the third one, and Junk. So I, particularly because of what the thing is they're doing, the reveal of what the class thing is, of the cross-dressing cafe.
Right.
So is Akane Takeshi from the original one?
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So it's like the characters have been loaded in the wrong role?
Possibly. At the very least, if it's not Takeshi, inference of that having the cross-dressing thing and them not wanting to take part of it is that maybe they are doing something that with the other characters as well. We shall see. They may just leave it all as subtext, so you don't have to actually worry of having ever seen Gridman the Hyper Agent whatsoever. So then they have to. They feed Anti in the shop, the mum and Caliber. And they also, the others yell at Caliber for not having killed Anti previously, but now Caliber's like taking him under his wing, caring for him to a degree.
Maybe seeing the potential for heel turning.
The little one, Boar, pulls a knife on him.
Some of them didn't react as much as you should.
Yes. Boar was like, falling off my phone saying, "Is there something you want to say to the kind lady who gave it that food, motherfucker?" Fucking knife he was talking about. I guess Sarah Cameron was like, "You're also like a weirdo who stares too much. I can see something in you. I got a young me." So,
yeah,
it's also you the right path.
It's also telling when the kaiju fight starts this time is that Anti doesn't join in.
Not only that, because their plan is to clear everyone out. They go there as Gridman first, so everyone's like, "Oh shit, a giant robot! Everyone run away!" And your one's like, "Fucking bullshit!" And Anti should have showed up by that fucking stage, right?
Yeah.
Mm. Mm.
So we have the question of whether his "I gotta beat Gridman" is still part of him now that he's been half blinded by Alexis.
Yeah.
And then we get the fight, we get the full, what's the full combination thing called?
It's called Full Power Grid Man.
That's it. Hyper Combined Full Powered Grid Man. And the grid full power finish. And this annoys Akane because she's like, "It's just a giant robot now."
This is bullshit.
Because we know she's also the Tokusatsu fan, like Sho is, so maybe this is also partly living out her dream of making her own Tokusatsu show, and now Gridman's ruined it by turning it into a mecha show.
Yeah, if the arms are robots and the legs are robots and the heads are robots, that's just a giant robot. That's not the same thing.
Well, also because they animate it differently to how they've been animating it before. They've been trying to animate it so it looks like a person in a suit.
And it basically becomes a different show. Yeah, yes.
Where now,
super robot.
To the point where they got into a little trouble. They were specifically making it look like a super robot.
A very particular super robot.
Yes.
Oh, I think it
you combine enough jets and drills and shit together, they're all going to look the same.
No, it was the
if they're actually animated the exact same way, way. And it was like something from Brave Express Might Gain.
Yes, it was Masami Obari sequence from Might Gain, to which Masami Obari kind of said, "It's a little close, fellas."
Yes. what's the burn? Someone tweeted back, "No way, I thought I had your approval," and saying, "Nope, I thought it was just a tribute as well, but it turns out they are plagiarizing." Not just that, also some other stuff. That's insane here. But anyways, it really blew up with some others, and obviously they're following people saying, "Yeah, it's not like what they've done. They're taking the piss a little bit." And Dave Barry said, "I'm going to go and talk to these guys and talk to them and say what is going forward. Now, obviously, tell them this isn't done. Don't do it again. It's not the fun, like, proper thing to do." But as online kind of controversies go, of course, we've had one side saying, no, I really like Gridman, so everyone is, again, all the talk. And then another side saying, "Yeah, I should burn Trigger to the ground because I got an action grind with them and this is the perfect chance for them to do it." Like, maybe we should have met people involved, talk about this like adults, like our heroes are trying to do in the program.
Yes, but it all comes down to my initial complaint of too many references, guys. Just chill a bit.
Yeah.
Take a leaf out of Planet With's book. That being said, I'm fully on board with the show. It's my favorite thing most weeks. Not this week. Something else was my favorite thing this week. And that favorite thing is Gege no Kitaro. Episode 34, The Emperor Backbeard. Because what I love about this show is when they've got episode where they want to get a serious message out, they make sure it looks fucking excellent.
Yeah.
Now, like, what you want to interpret?
The animation on the Paragon effects on that super arc or something else. That's yes. What
So, I mean, you can take it, read it. The way I read it was like a, I probably read it more politically than they were intending, but I don't know. It is about a foreign agent agitating racism within another country.
Using asylum seeking to fucking, yes. Get the public support behind you? Yeah, fucking, mm-hmm. I think that's pretty fucking there, right?
Yes.
Mm.
And
even people who previously had a more moderate stance on the whole issue then come forward saying, oh, I don't know, this guy's making some good points. I hadn't thought about it that way. And it's like, as right, you shouldn't have, because it's not like a very good stance to take.
And also you're being played by people from, like you say, foreign powers and shit. It's yeah. like, if they've done that by accident, holy shit, what a lot of things yeah, to have done by accident.
So, yeah. Because basically, Nozomi Otoko is the figure here of the guy who's angry for feeling got at, and he's got at, mm. and probably unfairly, just for farting in the pool last time they went on holiday.
The little man, the average Joe. The average what's Joe. What's in it yes. for me?
And yeah, yeah. He's basically, his anger is then pointed in a completely different direction from where it wants to be pointed at Agnes, when, Backbeard and Carmilla, as his agent, get involved.
Well, it's mostly because, like, yeah, she's invited to the hot springs, whereas he specifically has an uninvite to the hot springs because he keeps farting in there.
Yes, and also they're trying to make it look more suspicious because they're, like, kidnapping the most beloved and familiar characters and hypnotizing them. I was like, oh, yeah, that's Backbeard's power. I'm glad that's actually in here. And also, Nozomi Otoko just selling himself out straight away without needing hypnotizing is also in here. and so, yeah, then it all plays out along those lines. So, yeah, he turns everybody against them because it's like, oh, we've got this Westerner in here and we're using their weird Western yokai powers, and where's our most beloved yokai? Everyone's disappearing. What's going on?
Kishiro. You've got a flying broom. That's just weird. This is wrong.
You've got to take a side, Kitaro. And that forces his hand, and he has to actually fight Backbeard and all his friends, and Nozomi Otoko realizes he's been played when he thinks... Because what he's been told is, if you get rid of Agnes, then we'll leave all you Japanese yokai alone. We'll leave the country as well. And so he buys into that, and they were lying.
If you get
him.
Rid of the foreigners, things will be better for you yes. and your kind. Yeah, yes. yeah, yeah.
And so once he realizes he's been screwed, then he helps Kitaro by unleashing a killer fart. And that's the second thing with a killer lighting a fart joke in, and I can't remember what the other thing I've seen this past week. It also involved lighting a fart.
Not to this extent, though.
Not
right?
to this it's extent, like, no.
It was enough to unleash the fumes because it knocks out all of the hypnotized fucking New York guy friends. It fucking lays Carmilla, like Vampire Queen, like laid out right out on the ground.
Well, she was standing right beside it, ground zero, like, yeah.
You probably didn't need to light it up as well, but hey.
No, he lit it so Kitaro could explode toward the eyeball.
Well, that was it, yeah.
Yeah.
He is Portgasty Ace, so it's probably the Emperor's hacky. Yeah, and so that launch, and at this point, Agnes is trapped inside Backbeard in a weird, gross
eyeball prison.
Yeah,
behind the eyeball. Yeah, behind the lens. So it's super satisfying. And then when Kitaro was jumping up and just like the spirit hair vest punch, not a spirit hair vest drill this time.
That's right, an extra.
And Agnes from the other side is from this fireball magic, and this one blow Backbeard's eyeball out. That's gotta hurt, doesn't it?
It reminds me of like Galvatron in the Transformers movie, but he got a spaceship into the eye and then another spaceship out the other fucking eye, which is kind of worse. But yeah, it was like a drill thing, and I was just like, yeah, that's pretty sweet.
You've seen those Mega House Kitaro models they're bringing out?
I don't think so, no.
The Kidero one's really nice. But it comes in a two pack, I think, with, you can get a two pack, I think, and get them alone. But the Kidero one is him having a message delivered to him by a crow.
Oh, I see.
Ooh, I see it now. Yeah, yeah, it's in the current anime.
So I'm going to see the back of it. There we go. Yeah. Oh, that is good. Ah.
Very expensive though, so I won't be getting it. But the animation, this is great. Both the action and also particularly Nozomi Hotoko's character animation, because matched with Toshio Furukawa, it's just gold. It's very. I like it because I. Because I love Yurusai Tsura, he'll always be Ataru Moriboshi to me. And this sort of Nozomi Hotoko, the desperate, grasping, version of him, because he's not that in every episode he's in, but that's where he really shines. And the animation matches, or he's matching the animation, I guess, because I imagine they probably animated it first before he did the acting. That's the normal way of doing things with anime. It's just great. Just absolutely loved him, even though he's totally despicable through much of the episode.
I guess he comes around, but yeah, he's kind of like one of the main problems of it that they have to deal with.
It was a cool move, though. I gotta give him to that.
Yes.
Okay, that's probably the most like heroic he's ever been over the course of the series.
Which is what you want him to be from the comic a lot of the time. It's like, he'll be a dick. He'll be dragging Kitaro into stuff Kitaro doesn't want to get involved in. Which is kind of what we get less of in this one series. But then he'll have a change of heart. Then he'll do the right thing. Not necessarily the right thing because it's the right thing, but he'll do the right thing in the end.
He'll do the right thing because it works out for him right then.
Because he'll be seeing, if I do the right thing now, then things will work out for me. I see the way the tide is changing. Because that's quite often when he goes bad is because he sees the tide changing in one direction. And then he'll switch back to the good guy side because he suddenly realizes. I can return things to the status quo here by betraying the person who I betrayed my friends for in the first place.
And then my friends will have to love me.
Yes. But, I mean, the thing you get from the comic, and you get some of it here, but is kind of like the idea that, because he's the half yokai, he's living as an outcast amongst both societies. Righty-ho, then we've got Skullface bookseller Honda-san, bookstores are so wonderful, and the shelves with and without restrictions. So the first half, there's a lot of stuff about the rare customers that you have to deal with.
Yeah, he initially has a guy who's like buying, how many fucking books was it? Like 90 something books.
90 books.
Yes.
He was buying the entire fucking series. and the guy's face is like just dying. It's just like, are you sure you don't want us to deliver those? It's like, let me bring him to the door for you or something. Like, he's like, no, I got it. And he's just like, why have I done this? You can just see his face. It's like, oh, I shouldn't be doing this. But he can't not buy these books.
Yeah, it is his goal. He says he has to get them home today. So it's like, is he even buying them for himself? Is there somebody at home he's been sent to go get these books?
Is he reselling these?
Yeah. There's a story there, and it's a terrifying one, I imagine, from his face.
Then the Yakuza shows up, and maybe my favorite joke in the episode is that his inner monologue becomes more Yakuza-like. Yeah.
To try, like, toughen himself up to deal with the Yakuza?
And then the inventory program also becomes more Yakuza-like.
Yeah.
It's like, it's in stock, yo! Yeah.
Yeah. I like as well, because like he's paid for his up his and saying, oh, all right, thanks to the books. See you around, Honda-san. And it's like, what? How did he know my name? Oh, my name tag. Oh.
Yeah, as in, like, I think the guy's just buying, like, he's literally just buying books for a friend of his in prison, who loves books and loves to go out and buy books, but, you know, he's in prison right now, so he can't. And it's, it's a fairly innocuous thing. It's just like, yeah, he wants a couple of these books. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Get them delivered, no problem. Yeah, cool. But the fact that the guy is a criminal in prison is terrifying.
But he's totally great. Everyone's in, okay. Everything is okay. Find Ken Urasuda again, actually. It was Ogata in Modern Gamwe. That guy's getting around.
And then the most scary thing to him is when two fashionable types show up.
Oh, yeah.
I love the way that the reaction to the first guy buying all the books as well. The guys were like, fucking, I would just order them online. And they're going like, how could you? We work in a bookshop. It's our bread and butter. And everyone's just like, fucking, if I have to order a bunch of books, I'm just going to order them online. Fuck it.
I would have done. What?
Just monsters. Yeah.
But in the second half, we learn about the most terrifying customer to Honda. And that is children.
So was the mother trying to get out of paying tax? Is that what was happening there?
No, I think
she was hanging in the background, or did she just suddenly realize what was happening?
Yeah, I think because he was like trying to find her eyes to attract attention that the kid hadn't got enough money to buy the thing.
And he's just heartbreaking. It's just like, I can't tell this kid this isn't enough money because he will just freak out.
I just hope this kid, the child gets the same expression, that's kind of looking upwards, kind of mouth agape, and then there's the tears that start flowing out, the same expression, it's like, oh.
The upset has already happened, but the mood hasn't changed yet. Yeah.
Also, sorry, I forgot the prices are about van. No, it's okay, Mammy's buying it, it's alright.
And she's also like, no, it's okay, here you go, that's the extra bit, and he's like, he's just so thankful, it's like, oh fuck. Yeah, I can't deal with kids. They're just too pure, and everyone just call him a sick freak for enjoying the purity of children in a chaste way.
But the armor woman is even worse than he is. She is legitimately creepy about it.
I thought the joke was going to be the kid was buying something like super porny or something. Well,
that's the other joke.
Parents trying to keep kids away from the more salacious parts of the bookshop.
That they're into. This is Mammy's part of the shop. You can't and we'll it's not like you Men can't books. Go to Boys Love because you'll never come back. And it's like, but why not? That's what happened to Mother.
That's how you were born.
the kid finding their mom buying Magical Girl, all right. I guess this is pretty cute.
Shit.
Yeah, they're kind of like saying, oh, it must be hard for Honda because he's in the picture book and Western comics. So it's like there'll be lots of art
books.
Yeah,
he has to deal with these kind of people.
Yeah. Hmm. But then it's not just purity in children's eyes. You can also find them in Naruto fans from Texas.
Actually, the joke at the end of that was quite good as well, because I saw it coming like a mile away, but it's just like, they're going to comment on that, right?
Oh, yeah.
That was like, pretty good.
It's like, it's Anime Lewis.
Yes.
And just him kind of going like, it's like, I'm pretty sure they have Naruto in Texas, guys. Yeah. Why are you so excited about this? And a father and son bonding over it, you know?
Yeah.
Fucking beautiful.
And then there's like a bonus, but go for it, Azarashi-san, the hidden ambition, where his agent, the SEAL,
has... SEAL.
Yeah, he's making plans to get a live-action version of this made. We'd keep it the story exactly as it is, but we'll get a good-looking actor to play you. And then we get scenes we've seen in previous episodes, but now they replaced his skull head with a quote-unquote good-looking actor's head.
I don't know if it's played by a good-looking actor as a joke as well, but I did like him going, he's like, we can't do that because it still has my dialogue coming out of his good-looking face.
Yes.
And it's like, don't worry, people will accept it because he looks pretty. Don't worry about it.
And then they say, this is my favourite joke, is when they go, right, chief editor, off-screen is the chief editor. And the chief editor asks, also, could you draw me as a koala? And then it cuts to him with a head like a koala.
Yeah, because until he asks for what he wants to look like, we can't show him on screen. That kind of, it's pretty good. Yeah. Like, could they not do a live action, but with like a puppet skeleton, but everyone else is actors?
They could.
I think that'd be better.
Who was the guy who always used to do films with people with animal heads?
Guy did films with, like person who made or directed films?
Live action, yeah. Is it Minoru Kawasaki? Is that who I'm thinking of? Executive Koala. That was one. Crab goalkeeper.
It's like a CG, like...
No,
or
costumes.
Animated, like, animal head, all costumes? Okay, so it's just a person that's wearing a head.
Calamari Wrestler is the one I knew him from.
I know that one. Okay.
They did Executive Koala.
A long-running series.
Then Kabuto O Beetle. Then he did a live-action My Ching Machiko teacher. Then Crab Goalkeeper. Then that parody of Japan Sinks called The World Sinks Except Japan. Then I think I lost track of what things he was doing. I'd say he's got something called The Rug Cop.
Rug Cop?
Yes.
Based on previous output, I assume that's quite literal, yeah.
Is it a bearskin rug that solves crimes?
Is it a rug in a police hat?
Maybe a wig rug. Let me see. Yes, it is.
Okay.
Cult Japanese director Minoru Kawasaki satirizes Japanese cop shows of the 1970s with this unhinged spoof concerning a chrome-domed cop with a lethal projectile toupee.
I thought the hairpiece was, you know, had a voice as well. It had sentience.
Yes.
Like his partner was his hairpiece.
Yeah. Like, you know, you two guys hate each other, but they're going to pay you up anyway because you're made for each other. It's like, oh no, got to deal with this fucking wig on my head all the time. Yeah, but your bald ass isn't on my taste either, buddy. But we got to solve these murders, see?
Can we pitch that to someone?
I once dreamt that there was a cop show called Cop and Fridge, which was about a buddy cop show where one of the buddies was a fridge. Talking of buddy cop shows, Double Decker, Duck and Kirill. What a segue. Episode 10, I do believe. And this one is called... Let me open up this debris. Failed Detective, But Pure. In which we learn that Kirill is a secret genius.
Like, he forgot every smart thing he knows, but he is actually pretty fucking smart. Weird? What?
It's just not everything that he's specialized in is necessarily conducive to being a good police officer. Also, again, hamstrung
by his... I guess he did get to detective, so he can't be that fucking stupid.
Yeah, again, hamstrung by his, like, sort of idealistic fantasy representation of what being a cop actually is. But when the... when he calls for it, he does have quite a store of knowledge about a topic quite important to the work that 7-0 does.
You'd think that would have come up earlier. I did like Pink drawing a gun on him. It's like, who the fuck are you?
I won't allow us. You can't be not an idiot.
Well, you see,
I have you put in my head as an idiot. That's just a classification, so I can't reclassify you. Yeah.
It was after the end of last episode. I was like, is Travis the idiot he appears to be? Is it a coincidence that Kirill ended up on 7-0? Or is there something else going on here?
It might have been something manipulated above Travis's head, that kind of way.
Seemingly the
general guy only figured it out when he said that catchphrase.
Yes.
Mm.
But yeah, I wonder whether Travis knows stuff more than he appears to be. Similar to Kirill.
Surely he couldn't be that stupid, yeah. And since Kirill's not that stupid,
Who knows? Maybe even the changing the... Maybe everything Travis does will turn out to have a reason at the end.
What, like spinning his coffee on himself?
Yes.
You went the robot, didn't you? No, I didn't.
I got a job for Kirill. Shut up. Everyone shut up about the coffee.
I'm the boss. I'm the chief.
It would be nice if he turned out to be effective and not just kind of a self-serving, wants to get a promotion guy who's remarkably stupid. Yeah,
it seems
much
weird.
As I do like that character, yeah.
It really seems weird there's only 3 episodes left.
yeah, they've got a lot to cover, seemingly.
Unless they're planning another season.
Yeah, yeah.
So the crux of this episode is that it hinges around the idea that while Anthem is an illegal drug, what if there were some practical uses for it in medicine? Which is, of course, a legitimate argument about other real-life classified drugs.
Yeah, yeah.
And so in this case, it's like end-of-life care. It's like, can you give someone a better end-of-life by administering Anthem?
Oh, by giving them, like, superhuman strength and stuff, they might be able to survive the disease, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Also, Doug is avoiding coming back to work by refusing to fill in the papers he needs to leave the hospital and come back to work.
And just sort of hanging out, having a little holiday at the hospital.
It's finally time off. Like, you get it otherwise. And it will give it to Kirill, even though he's got a better vested interest in, you know, wanting to get the paper filled out. He is quite a stickler for getting reports filled in and everything like that. So he is like a good by the book cop, which you kind of think to look at them. Oh, Doug is the one who does things, you know, to the letter before. Actually, no, Doug is usually the one that's pissing about most of the time. And Kirill is the guy, despite his enthusiasm, his over enthusiasm, wants to do the job properly.
Yeah, Doug only kind of gets involved because of the amount of places he's hidden around the hospital from his partner. He's accidentally discovered clues to the mystery, that kind of thing.
And while Kirill's visiting Doug at the hospital, a teenager tries to hire him as a prostitute.
Like, that happening before the credits, I was kind of like, okay, where the fuck are you going with this show? And the fact that that was his endearing feature, they really, I was like, come on, okay, where are you going with this show? And they did actually go somewhere with it, which was okay, I guess, but it's still like, that's weird.
Lucky they didn't fucking haul that kid in for soliciting an officer.
Well, that's what he said. It's like, motherfucker, I'm a police officer.
Because he then
that's
does it
super
again.
Illegal.
He then does it again to Kay after they've told him off.
And she's more annoyed that,
Pink's annoyed because
she hasn't been solicited.
Yes. She's initially annoyed that he's trying to solicit her, and then he explains that, no, I was trying to solicit it. Okay, and then she's even more annoyed.
Yeah, that's the
thing. She's more annoyed, like, well, but that's all I'd be worth. If you couldn't pay me with that, not that I would do that, but that's, I've got to pay a lot more than that to hire me, buddy.
Yeah, all her complaints are kind of like, hang on, that's what you're mad about? And someone arrest this child. That's illegal.
But yeah, it turns out his dad is basically getting hospice care because he's dying. And so Kirill sort of takes him under his wing. There's like, this is where we also learn his genetics knowledge as he's discussing it with the doctors there.
Yeah, he's hanging out with the other two detectives as they can actually do work. And they're like, I suppose you don't know how the drug works. And they kind of looked at each other and they're like, I don't really know much about it. And Kirill fucking takes out a whiteboard and fucking like seemingly ad libs how the drug works. It's like, yeah, that's probably what it would do.
My memory on this part is hazy, but I believe it goes something like this. And the doctor's like, once actually he's got this like spot on. It's actually one of the better ways I've seen this explained in my whole career studying this field of medicine. This is actually very good.
That's the best medically correct explanation to a layperson I've ever seen. The doctor has to applaud. It's just like fucking wow.
And then later,
he kind of goes to him. Is like, could you like get us an in with the military because we're trying to legalize it for medical use?
And then later on, the Bieber recommends him a paper, which it turns out Kirill had written himself.
Not in college, to pay for college tuition.
Yeah,
to get a scholarship to get into the college.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, I fucking did that one. And he's like, what?
But after that, I guess he just went and blew it and joined the academy then.
Yeah. But I just forgot everything I wrote. I just shat out that to fucking, you know, pay for tuition fees and stuff.
Now, this really makes Peach bad. I refuse to accept the possibility that you're not an idiot.
Well, a brain surgeon can be an idiot, so don't worry about it.
But he still can't figure out what's in the anti-AMS bullet, which, of course, is the other thing that Esperanza can't figure out, which is what turns out those doctors are trying to figure out. Dun, dun, dun. So they take your kid to stay in Kirill's apartment. Again, the cat shows up, gets the best animation of the episode.
Yeah, they do love that cat.
As when the kid starts crying and getting the cat
and
wet.
It's shaking itself and kind of reacting. He's like, why the fuck are you crying on me? As only a cat can make that look, yeah.
And Derek and Valerie show up with a Derek special.
Takeout.
Yes.
Like, you could have had that yourself. It's frozen fucking food.
Your Deliveroo is here.
Kira's like, why have you both come? And Valerie's like, well, Derek didn't think it was safe for a woman to walk here alone.
So he doesn't know. Okay.
No, he still does not know. To be fair, okay. Kirill did not know either. So.
There's a lot of idiots to keep track of in this show, yeah.
There is. I mean, it feels like Kirill, it's like, is there something more going on with his brain?
Yeah, has he taken some brain damage and is forgetting basic things like your sister is your brother?
Or is there legitimately things in his past which are not...
Oh, like trauma, or...?
No, like, is the history he remembers the history which actually happened to him? Or is the history which actually happened to him did happen to him, and he's remembering it right, and everybody else has got it wrong?
Right, okay.
What happened 40 years ago when the city lost its memory?
Exactly. It's like there's so many, like, there's like, not so many, but there's enough references to Tiger and British stuff. It's like, is there just a reference? Or is there something weird going on? Particularly now it's like, oh, we're now getting into genetics. We're now getting into, there's the mystery of what's in these bullets we blindly use, which the military are supplying to us. And at the end, when it's like, Brian Cooper shows up, not at 7-0, but shows up at Derek's bar to ask Kirill, would you like to join the military? What is going on? I presume in the next three episodes they will tell us.
Either that, or they really want to set up like a 50 more goddamn mysteries before the next series. Yeah.
Did you notice the initial victims that they had in the file?
How could you not fucking notice? They had two things in common. They were all actors and Ghostbusters. Fuck's sake.
Yes, so Derek's on the case because, Doug. My brain from
Derek. Derek is anything but.
Yeah. He's accidentally on the case because of his hospital holiday.
Yes, because he sees that, say, another sick patient is now up and about full of life. They find out that he's taken Anthem, but then he's starting worrying, but they can't get a read with the eyes because it looks like,
the dosage isn't right, or there's something wrong with it, because it just comes up as an error code, but obviously it's detecting something, and he's jumping around like a lunatic.
Yes, I think it's when it's interacting with whatever terminal illness you've got, it doesn't behave the same way as it does when a healthy person takes Anthem.
Yeah, well, they are trying to use it like a cure to their diseases, rather than just it's an overdose of a drug.
Well, it was reading the eyes, I think, is the fun. Well, it's reading as you've already shot this person with, like, the AMS bullets or the drugs that ever came with them. So it's already, I'm reading it as it being in their system, so you probably shouldn't probably shouldn't shoot them again otherwise.
Yeah, and also, but when it goes weirdly wrong, then they're trying to figure out what the ratio is by randomly injecting people with the things which are in the bullets.
Yeah. It seems like it's some kind of, like, vaccine. So, like, if the Anthem, it turns on otherwise dormant genes and unlocks latent abilities and removes natural limiters. Something, like, in the drugs that it kind of racks some kind of vaccine in it, because administered on their own to a patient, they can produce similar effects for the guys turning into weird, scaly monster people.
Yeah, your man, what did he say? He just said vitality when he wanted it.
I like the fact that Kirill just shoots him straight away. He doesn't even get turned into a monster.
Like, well, I mean, like, we got you fucking red-handed, dude. But I think it's like the thing that they're looking to get out of the Anthem changes exactly what the anthem does to them and what they get out of the anthem.
Yes.
So that would require a different dosage, because it's like, oh, he's not after power, he's after a different thing, that kind of thing. It's going to change what dosage you need, because you're at, literally what you're looking for from the anthem is a different thing.
But what the doctors are actually doing is they're getting test subjects because they're part of Esperanza.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to figure out what's in those bullets so they can probably adjust what's in anthem to
counteract them.
Or
sure.
Maybe make their own bullets, I don't know.
Or I would say make opposite bullets where you shoot it at somebody and they turn into a Master Man person.
Or possibly fix the 30% mortality rate in anthem.
Hmm.
Yeah, and then the crux is, will the dad of the kid take the anthem as the doctor's encouraging him, but he refuses to, steps on it. As they get
yeah,
happy.
It's like the problem's kind of resolved, but it's like, will he pick it up? And it's not so much like, oh no, he'll pick it up and then he'll turn into a monster and then they'll fight. It's like, no, if he picks it up, he'll be fucking shot and he's definitely going to die. So
we should also say him. The kid was trying to hire prostitutes to have sex with his dad.
Not really a great reason, but as Killer pointed out, it's like, if you think your dad's life was pathetic now because he raised you fucking on his own and shit, then you're a shitty fucking kid.
That's why I give the old man a good send off, you know. Let him pass away with a smile on his face.
So yeah. Instead, to put a smile on his face, he rolls up in his hospital room with Kirill in a bridal gown.
Because it was mentioned, it's like, don't you want to see your son grow up and get married one day? And like, his son's kind of like, oh, fuck it, we put together this entire thing just to show you that I'll be okay, basically.
Yes.
But his thing of like, it's like, I might marry, I might have kids. If I do, I hope I'll be a dad like you. I might marry a fucking Egypt like this guy. Who knows?
Yeah. Kirill is into it, and
he knows he can fucking pull off that dress. Yeah.
Well. Because yeah. Barry's going, oh, Kirill, you look fantastic. I know. I know I do.
Dear.
Mm-hmm. And then next week is episode called 7-0 Dies Twice.
The commentator is surprised by this. Obviously no one fucking told him about it. It's like, wait a minute, two of them are going to fucking die.
And then I was like, where have I heard that before? And I was like, there's definitely a Lupin Dies Twice episode. And I was like, there's a Kamen Rider Dies Twice. I was like, okay, that's too much of a coincidence. Hang on. Oh yes, I remember now. 007 Dies Twice is the name for You Only Live Twice in Japan. And then I suddenly realized, oh, fucking hell, 7-0, 007.
Yes. You didn't get that?
No, not, because I was thinking 5-0. I was thinking Hawaii 5-0.
Oh, yeah, they're doing both, like, yes. Is what I figure, yeah. Because they're super secret police.
No. But it's even worse, Dwayne, is because I've done a panel within the past few weeks about anime superheroes, in which Double Decker is one of the final slides. One of the first slides is fucking James Bond.
I guess, yeah, you should have made the connection there. Yeah.
And we're giving Gridman stupid references.
I know. Anyway, next time I'm going to change that slide to the Japanese poster for You Only Live Twice, and then I can, I won't have room. There's no room for me to go into the fact that there's a Kamen Rider episode.
Yeah. Also, you have slides with Kamen Rider and Lupin in that presentation as well, so, which would make direct reference to this.
Mm.
Yeah, but, that further consolidated in my mind is like, yeah, I don't think people talk enough about how much James Bond is an influence on all superheroes, Japanese and American.
Hmm.
Because I don't think that's kind of where you get that, that modern super criminal organization idea from.
Oh, I mean, like, a lot of supervillains and their bases and their plan to take over the world and shit. It's like, yeah, that's James Bond villain.
It is. That's from pulps as well. But I think the imagery of them is definitely from the James Bond films.
Mm. The kind of sophisticated kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah. Like the suit, like everyone's wearing jumpsuits and all that stuff. Good episode.
Hmm.
Can't remember anything too ugly looking in animation wise.
No, it's fine.
I mean, the cat's the standout, like you said.
It was the cat. Yeah. When I saw that cat getting his head cried on, I was like, blow me neck, they love that cat.
Did they get someone in who's just like the fucking boss of animating cats?
I think they also like the landlady as well.
Maybe.
I don't think that.
I mean, like, I like the landlady as well, so yeah, that's fair.
But I don't think she's ever had a bad shot.
Well, mostly she gets like to grin or take the piss out of everyone else, so that endears her to me as well. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh, we got the landlady in this episode. I better bring old Koji and do his stuff.
I mean, the cat seems to like Derek's special.
Well, that cat will probably eat out of bins. So
that's true. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it does eat out of bins. Isn't that how we found it?
I think we did. Yeah. Well, it wasn't eating; it was just lounging in a bin. He was very relaxed in a skip.
It's like Mister. It's just wants Elizabeth to find the beauty in the simple things in life.
I'm wondering if like, there's going to be like a secret reveal, like with all the other secret reveals, of Derek's food is actually like fucking handmade. Those chips are fucking hand cut and everything. They just, the way he cooks them, they come out like they're fucking frozen. I fucking grew these beans myself on this very bus. Yeah.
I squeezed them out myself and I grew the fucking cane sugar in the fields to make the tomato juice to carry the beans go winter.
Fuck.
Right here, that is everything for this week. We will be back here next week for, what did I say it was called? It was the first assignment from the
meeting
boss.
With the boss, or the boss's first assignment. What was it? First assignment from the boss. The boss is going to tell him what to do. That's going to happen. It's going to be bizarre and an adventure with JoJo.
I presumably not directly. I'm presuming we won't meet the boss till the very end.
Oh no, you won't.
That is the central mystery. In the meantime, check out our regular podcast at secretofthesailormadness.com and dynamiteinthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Boy.
Bye now.
Let me delete the word moody jazz from this at the end of that paragraph, because I'm always tempted to say it. Goodbye, moody jazz.
I just read whatever's in front of me.
Yeah.
Ha 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 ha.